It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. We've got a great in-studio panel. Jason Heiner is here, Mike Elgin, and Liz Gaines is back. And we're going to talk about the latest tech news, including a good story about fiber. And I want to give credit for our show title today to Mike Masnick of Tech Dirt for a great line. We'll explain what fiber to the press release means. We'll also talk about Apple, augmented reality, maybe a little bit more sober look at that from our panel this week. And a lot more. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for TWiT's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make TWiT even better. And thanks for your continued support.
This is TWiT This Week in Tech, episode 601, recorded Sunday, February 12th, 2017. Fiber to the press release. This Week in Tech is brought to you by IT Pro TV, an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. Visit itpro.tv/twit and use the code TWIT30 for a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/twit2. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/twit and entering the promo code TWIT. And by SeatGeek. Get the best deal on sports, concert, and theater tickets with SeatGeek. To get $20 back on your first SeatGeek purchase, download the SeatGeek app and use the code TWIT. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the week's tech news. Oh, I am so excited today because not only do we have fancy eyewear for the show, because I don't know why Valentine's Day is Tuesday, but we have a all-in-studio panel. And when we have an all-in-studio panel, I think the show kind of is more fun, starting with Jason Heiner from Tech Republic at CBS Interactive. Hey, Jason.
Glad to be here.
Looking good in those shades.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I can take these with me, right?
Yeah, they're yours to keep.
Excellent.
Yeah.
These are highly non-functional glasses.
They're terrible. They are. That really voice is somebody we haven't had on in ages, and I'm so glad to have Liz Gaines back.
Sorry, I had to take glasses.
You can put them on. Put them on. You're wearing the
can
pink
I wear
shirt.
Them like this?
Yeah, that's even better. Oh, that's nice. Much more lovely.
Thank you.
Liz is now formerly at Recode. We've known Liz for a long time. Had a baby since I saw you last. How old's your baby?
She's almost a year.
Wow.
Mm, yeah, it's nice. Been a while.
Did a journalism fellowship at Stanford, which sounds
the baby?
Really cool. Yeah. She's a little precocious.
She came to some classes. She asked Condoleezza Rice a couple questions.
Did she really?
No, she's slept.
Babies love the name Condoleezza. They love it. And now is at a coincidentally at a site. Well, maybe it's not a coincidence. Called 60DB.
Yeah.
At 60db.co. And I think it was Matthew Ingram, your former colleague, I think. Matthew Ingram, maybe not.
Yes, we worked together at GigaOM.
GigaOM, yeah. Who said, oh, you got to try the 60DB. I don't know if he knew you were there. He didn't mention you. And so I was listening to it, and there's Liz Gaines doing interviews and stuff. I said, Liz! So I was really pleased. We've plugged this a couple of times because I think it's a great app. It's a great website. But more importantly for me, it's an Echo skill.
Yeah.
And it's
a voice interface for life to get you news wherever.
Yeah, so it's like kind of like reintroducing the podcast in a way to the normals who don't listen to podcasts.
Well, yeah. I mean, can I like quickly describe what it is?
Let me introduce Mike and then I'll have you do that. Mike Elgin, I don't want Mike sitting here cooling his heels. Mike Elgin is also here, Elgin.com and becomingnomad.com.
Yes.
Still hasn't left the country.
I'm
not pushing you out. But you
I'm afraid I won't be able to get back in.
You had a beautiful granddaughter.
Yes, Princess Squishy Face, yes.
I love Princess
Squishy
Face.
We're going to Venice in April, so that's
Is that where you're
going
to end up?
That's where we're going to start, and we're going to probably bum around Europe for...
Why ever leave Venice?
How come Mike's got two pairs of glasses?
I'm special.
He's got mine.
Oh, one is for this. It's a very executive...
You look very professorial.
Yeah, professional.
When you bite on your Valentine's Day weird glasses.
Although these have...
Not only non-functional, they actually... They impair your vision.
They're bad.
What's the point of these? I don't understand.
Yeah, they're bad.
So anyway, good to have you.
Thank you.
And good luck in Venice.
Thank you.
I always, when I go to Venice, that beautiful Italian town that's floating, I think it must be hard to live here, like harder even than Manhattan.
Right.
Because you have to walk everywhere or take a boat. Shopping must be murder.
Yeah. On one of those little boats with the bags.
Yeah.
Got to be horrible.
People who live in Venice really want to live there, I guess.
Yeah. Well, wait till they have self-driving gondolas. It's going to be a totally different thing. It's going to change everything, Leo.
So tell us about 60 dB, Liz, as long as we got that conversation started. Because to me, this is kind of the next step in what podcasting started. 60 dB takes over from,
well,
I think.
Podcasting is great, but there's all sorts of other ways that you want to listen to audio, and it doesn't have to be like an hour long conversation between a couple people. Like, that's just one way. Those are great. But I think I heard the stat in our pitch deck the other day that like terrestrial radio has 90 million more weekly active users than Facebook. So like there is something bigger than Facebook, and it's people listening to stuff. And so, yeah, 60 dB is like a personalized playlist of news. So instead of like getting in your car and listening to like radio technology that has not changed in forever, that's, you know, you turn into one channel, you're 10 minutes late for their show, so what? You're not interested, so what? This is just like a personalized playlist of usually like 5 to 7 minute clips, so it's like a show that's edited for you. And then
and it never stops
driving,
it's kind of an endless
home, then you ask Alexa to start 60 dB again and you keep on going with your channel.
And does it, I'm sorry to interrupt, Leo, but does it sort of automatically customize itself?
You customize it.
Yeah, it's like a Tinder. You swipe and then you hear
less
of that.
No. Really?
Yeah.
That's great.
I can swipe?
Yeah, you can say next and we
retain that information.
Oh, yeah,
on the Echo you can say next.
Yeah, like if you, so that was a long way to explain it, but another way to say it is like our founders came from Netflix and NPR. So what is Netflix plus NPR?
Right.
And it's personalized radio.
And you do, when you first sign up, there's an onboarding experience where you pick categories that you're interested in.
Yeah, and like you get exposed to stuff you would never hear on the radio. I had a barbecue podcast the other day and I was like, this is awesome. Yeah. I've never heard this on the news. I'm much more educated on sports and markets and all sorts of things than I would normally be.
I just signed up while we were doing it.
Well, it's free. What's the monetization strategy? You're going to put ads in there? What is the... you're doing content for this too. You're doing unique content for
it. Yeah, I mean, I think... We don't have this yet, but how does Netflix make money?
Right.
We're probably going to do that.
I would subscribe. I'd pay for this, absolutely. And by the way, Twitbits are on here, show up on here. So
they do. They come up in my feed a couple times a week.
Yeah, we're
happy
about that.
Short form, so are you optimizing for a certain size?
Look, so here's quick hits. These are 5 to 10 minutes, right? Or even shorter sometimes. And then in-depth is longer.
Okay. Yeah, so we do both. We're getting better at doing in-depth because like, I think at first we were like, people don't realize that short form is great, but then it turned out that most people who download, like early adopters tend to already know about digital audio, so we have to be a good podcast app too. So now we're going to be like both short form and podcast.
I wouldn't really think of yourself as a podcast app because...
But like you don't want to switch apps just to listen to something longer. So we're trying to give you both of those, and actually we had a redesign go live on Saturday that has both of them now.
Oh, interesting.
Nice. Okay. The UI was really good. Like I just signed up just while we were talking about this, and it like had me, you know, I was in, used, you know, my Twitter account, gave my email and picked like three things, and then, so yeah.
And you can put the app on your phone so you get in the car, you can listen on the app, but you can also do it on your Echo, which to me is mostly how I consume it. I get up in the morning, I say,
yeah,
listen.
Hopefully like cars will have voice interfaces soon. I mean,
someday.
Car technology is
someday.
Never as fast as you want it.
I think you're really onto something because not interacting with the app while I'm listening is really important to me because I'm usually cooking or doing dishes or I'm taking a hike or something. I don't want to touch anything.
Some of the inspiration for this must be NPR One. NPR had this insight originally with their app, right, where you would just say, listen, and it would play your NPR shows one after the other.
Yeah, which is great and pretty similar.
But limited.
We have a bit more variety, right? Because NPR is biased
towards
their own content.
Yeah, I use the NPR One app. So actually just, and I'd heard of 60 dB, but hadn't downloaded it yet.
Yeah,
so
check it out. We're brand new, but like I think it's actually really good for being a 3-month-old product.
And you're working as a journalist for them. You're doing journalism.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me talk so much about what I'm doing. I would be happy to tell you. Yeah, I'm helping places like The Atlantic or Wired or Politico create more audio content and then that fits into our feed because they write great stories, but like not everyone wants to read stories. And hopefully they'll start doing that themselves. I also do some more original stuff. Like I really wanted to cover the AI versus humans poker tournament. Yeah. So I like found a reporter who went to that and called them. I wanted to cover the Hyperloop competition, so I found a reporter who went to that. So like sometimes I'm driving
you.
It too.
Because that journalistic instinct is really important, I think, to giving it a full stack of stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like the idea of engaging other journalists and stuff that are doing and turning these into audio stories too, because we've done, I've lost count of how many times we've started a podcast and it always peters out after a year or so.
Right.
And, but we know that it's a good way to engage the audience. And so I think there's a market there to engage with publishers and turn more of what they do into, you know, audio stories.
But you'd have to be insane to get into the podcasting.
You would actually.
What kind of nut?
I'll vouch. No, I kick myself that I didn't think of this because we have the skill to put together audio feeds, but there are a lot of people, and we get approached frequently by people like Tech Republic, not you didn't, but others who say, hey, we want to do a show. You know how to do this. How do we do it? Could we partner with you? This is actually a better way to do it. And frankly, there's a monetization plan. I don't know if that's one that you're considering, but the ability to put The Atlantic on the radio,
yeah,
it's got to be valuable to them. They don't have they do have podcasts, but they don't.
But not short stuff. Yeah,
do all
yeah. A lot of places don't have,
yeah.
and reporters don't realize how easy it is to talk about their stuff.
If
and,
you have somebody like you on
the
other side.
And so I call them like 5 minutes after they finish the story. It's fresh in their head, and they can tell me a few stats. I can edit in a few clips. I am a month into being an audio producer, so I'm getting faster at it. Yeah, I've been working some nights, but hopefully I'll get quick at it.
Yeah, neat. Well, that's a big plug for 60dB, but I think it's worth plugging because I think this and it doesn't really help us particularly. We'd far prefer you use our apps or listen on our website and hear the whole show. But at least it's an introduction to people who've never heard Twit. They can hear a short bit and say,
we'll bring you an audio.
That's why we make Twit bits, right? We make them and we put them on YouTube so that people can in our website so people can download something quick and kind of get a sense of what they might be hearing. With the 3-hour episode, which you're about to do.
Yeah. Oh, is that it?
Well, we just spent half an hour on 60dB. I think it's getting longer all the time. No,
I'm
going
to try it on my way back to the city.
Yeah. It's really fun. I actually wanted to ask you, Mike, because you wrote a good article. Where was that? Was Computer World? Where did you write that article?
About Twitter?
Yeah.
No. Yes, Computer World. Yep.
I just read that this morning.
Yeah.
Twitter announced this week that they are going to... Well, a couple of things happened. First of all, Twitter had its financial results.
Yes.
And
not good.
They weren't great. They only had 2 million new users in a 3-month period.
And I contest that. Well, I don't know how many of those are fake
or bots. I would bet half of those, as is often the case with Twitter, are spam or fake accounts.
Yeah.
So a million, maybe? Compare that to, what was it, 83 million that Facebook got in the same quarter?
Right.
And they have done nothing. Going back to their previous CEO, Dick Costolo, who said, it's on me. We haven't done a good job dealing with abuse. We've done a terrible job. We're going to do it better. And they haven't. And now, you've got Jack. They tried to find a buyer. Jack Dorsey, the CEO, apparently interested. F. Williams, one of the founders, not interested. Nevertheless, the board encouraged them to find a buyer. Or was it the other way around? Ev wanted to sell and Jack didn't. I can't remember. But nobody will buy it.
It's a toxic brand.
Because I think that's the problem.
It's the harassment.
You point that out in your article, that no advertiser wants to be in an environment where you don't know what's going on.
You don't want to be sandwiched between two bits of hate speech.
Right.
You don't want your brand there being
presented. Twitter's, go ahead and say it.
I was just going to say, Twitter's never been more relevant.
Exactly.
Yeah. It should. We need it desperately. I'm so afraid that they're going to fail and fail and fail, and then they're going to sell it to some company that's going to strip it for parts and milk it for whatever all it's worth, and it's going to be this lost opportunity.
Well, then that was even the rumor, is that some hedge fund or investment group would buy it and do exactly that. What you really want is almost a journalistic entity to buy it, right?
Mm. No, My fantasy is that some well-meaning billionaire buys it as a
Jeff
pet
Bezos type and says,
"Well, maybe well-meaning." I said,
"I think Jeff's done pretty well with the Washington Post.
He really has. He's done a great job.
I think he deserves credit. That's...
Yeah, and he does have his own space program, so respect for Jeff Bezos. But I want it to continue to be what it is, minus the harassment.
Yeah."
And that there's one thing that they do that they refuse to change that I think is the whole problem, and it's this. So if you go to Facebook, Google Plus, Pinterest, Instagram, every social network except Twitter, if somebody replies to something you post, you can delete it. Twitter has refused to do that. So if somebody puts hate speech as a reply to my thing, I can't do anything.
You can actually delete it.
I can't delete theirs.
But you can delete it from other sites.
From every other site. every other site. And that's why Twitter has a special reputation for harassment, because there's nothing. You have to go hat in hand to Twitter and say, please, please remove this person. They're clearly a troll. The whole account is nothing about except harassment. But then the every time you build an anti-harassment feature, they build a better harasser. So they figure out how to get around these things.
Instead of death threats, they say,
oh, somebody should kill you. You know, it's like,
there's a technical issue with this. That's the same reason they don't add edit. Yeah. Right? Everybody says, oh, you should be able to edit your tweet. But the problem is that with Twitter, once a tweet goes out, deleting it doesn't really delete it. You know, because there's third-party programs, there's databases, mm-hmm. there's the Library of freaking Congress. There's people archiving Twitter all the time. So once, you know, and somebody should tell the U.S. government that, once you put a tweet out, it's there permanently.
Yeah. Right.
So you could delete. I guess it'd be better than nothing. They've announced some initiatives this week. Three of them. Tell us about the three initiatives.
Okay, so one of them is that they remove problematic results from search. So if people are tweeting something that's harassment or hate speech or low quality content, and you search for it, you can't find it. It won't show up in search. And they base that on the wrong criteria. The criteria that they use is if somebody's been blocked by a lot of people or muted by a lot of people, their post don't come in. So
humans
right there,
are better at this than the machines.
Way better.
This was your point in the article.
Yeah.
Like, was that humans are better than machines at this.
At understanding the nuances of language, but to the search point, now this becomes a source of harassment. So, for example, lots of people have blocked you, Leo, and now you're not going to show up in search results.
Right.
And so now they're...
Because Twitter will misinterpret that signal as
it's a dumb
harasser.
Signal.
Yeah.
Right? Because the haters...
What
now
would be better?
What would be better would be for everything to show up in search results, and then every tweet or in every reply to your tweets has two buttons. One is delete this reply
for me
for
my
you,
tweet.
But it deletes a reply for everybody. Nobody else can see it in third party
so
issues.
It's like
and
a
so
comment
on.
Thread instead.
It's
of
like every other screen. Social network. On Facebook, if somebody replies to something you post, you can go in. There's a menu item. You say delete this, and it goes away. And
it really
it.
Does go away because you don't have third party clients. You don't have a history. You don't have search.
Exactly.
You know, so it does. It can Twitter.
But even if it continues to persist on third party clients, it would still on the main site.
Twitter would have to kill the API or modify it.
I don't really know what percentage of people are getting on the app or on the site or whatever, but that would be one thing. And the other one would be delete this reply and block the user. And then block should have more juice than it currently does. But that's really the secret sauce. Now this.
So what they propose is to make it harder for people to recreate serial accounts. An abuser, by the way, I don't know
and
how
that's
they're
problematic.
Gonna do that because... we have abusers who use, you know, spoofing and so forth. It's very almost impossible. They create a new email address, spoof the IP address. How do you know it's the same person coming back?
So think about this. Let's say a janitor comes in here and uses your guest network to harass somebody.
Yeah.
They shut down your IP address and now nobody, no guest, no employee, nobody can tweet or set up accounts. That's a I don't know how they're going to do that.
So somehow they're going to identify people who've been suspended and stop them from creating new accounts. If they could do that, that would be helpful. That only, in my opinion, that works most with people like Milo Yiannopoulos, who was an anonymous. You can say, Milo, you can't create a new account. Mm-hmm. He may have created an anonymous account, but he can't create a new account under his own name.
Right.
So, right. There's like a reputation aspect to it.
But that's a small number of people.
Yeah. I mean, the vast majority of
anonymous.
Trolling happens because you can do it anywhere and you know your reply shows up no matter whether you built a reputation or not.
Right.
Yeah. The simple solution to that is pseudonymity, where Twitter knows who you are. You have proved Twitter who you are, and then you can have any public name you want, and then they should have an option that says, you know what, I don't want to hear from anybody who's anonymous.
Okay.
Unless I follow them or
there was we were told they were going to do that. They were starting
expand
to do that.
Expand verification.
Yeah. But they apparently abandoned that.
Yeah.
We mentioned removing from search results and the problem with that.
Right.
They also say maybe they'll collapse or hide objectionable replies.
Which is a useless feature because it's again, head in the sand type of attitude that Twitter's already had. If there's low quality content, and by the way, their search algorithms, their software is going to misfire on this as it does on every other social network. On Google Plus, like 10% of the things that they hide are perfectly good content, and 10% of the garbage they allow.
So it's hard to do this well.
It's hard to do it well.
If Google can't do it, I doubt Twitter.
But then they hide it from me, and if I unhide it or hide it, it just only affects what I see.
That's my biggest problem. They've proposed this. You know, they always say if you complain about somebody, well, just mute them, just block them, then you won't see it. But that's not the problem. It's I don't care about seeing it. It's about other people seeing it. That's a problem.
I think the way to use social media is that my profile on any social site should be a place where I start conversations and I cultivate conversations, and I can make sure that people don't derail those conversations. Yeah. That's the problem. It's the derailment. The S-posting, of, I don't know if I want to say the full word, where you throw a bunch of garbage. People having constructive political conversation and a bunch of haters come in and start screaming at everybody.
Yeah.
Okay, the point of that is to make sure nobody can have a conversation.
Yeah.
If you can just delete those people and just keep the rational people, then you can have a conversation, and that should be controlled by each individual profile.
In our chat room, Web6858, not his real name, says, just leave Twitter alone, and people who don't like it can go to Facebook or some other service.
That's the leave Britney alone guy. He's now moved on to Twitter.
Leave Twitter alone.
I think there's a couple things, though, to keep in mind with this, and I think Mike's point is, Mike's poking the holes in what Twitter's doing, and that's perfectly valid. I think there's a couple things to keep in mind. One is that this pretty much happens to every social network, every community. Over time, it's almost like a law of nature that they get worse, and you know, communities reach this point where they get really bad.
But Facebook hasn't.
For the exact reason we talk about, you have to be you. It's very hard to have a fake
real
fake
names
account.
Policy makes a difference.
And it makes a difference. But also, the thing that makes Twitter great, it's like when you fall in love with someone and you realize like their best quality is also their worst quality, right? It's the same thing with
Twitter.
That's
an interesting philosophy. Like,
best quality is its openness, right?
It's also its worst.
Evan Williams made this thing, and he went to bat very early on.
The free speech wing of the free speech party is what he said.
Yes. Yes, he very much went to bat for the, you know, openness of this platform early on. And the openness is still its strength, and it's also its weakness. Yeah. And I don't know, I think the one thing that has the best chance of solving this is, you know, what you're talking about is the fact that they want to, if they follow through with opening it up to the people to want to get verified, mm-hmm. and then they give precedence to those
use the real names policy in the
for
side
search.
Door.
Yeah, expand the notion of verification down. From public figures to people who are willing to be themselves.
Right. Yes,
yeah. I feel like though the better comparison, and not to say they've figured it out, would be Reddit. Right, like Reddit is Twitter in a discussion board form,
but
and
they're
so
struggling big.
Well,
time.
Absolutely, but they. Reputation matters then because it's a continuous discussion rather than its own.
And they have karma. Level. I mean, they have voting.
Yeah.
In fact, the voting works quite well to hide a lot of the junk unless you go to a subreddit around junk and then nobody downvotes it because this is what we're here for.
And on Reddit, you can pick. You can go to the trollish, hateful speech.
But you don't have to.
And it's voluntary. Yeah. And everything's segregated. Where the problem with Twitter is that like it's open.
It's
everything is
room.
Wide open. The thing that I think the mistake he makes, is that the problematic tweets are problematic precisely because they stifle free speech.
Mm-hmm.
Harassing people, silencing women, doing all those things that the haters do, that's actually ending free speech, not promoting it. Allowing somebody to derail conversations when people are trying to have a constructive conversation does not promote free speech. And that's why there's no substitute for letting people choose themselves. Now, if I delete somebody's comment, he wants to go diss me on their profile or on somebody else's comment thread, great.
Right.
That's fine. But like, I'm trying to have a good conversation here, and I should
not
be able to
let
control
it hijacked. You should.
Exactly.
That's the problem with the platform is it does let other people hijack the conversation.
I also wonder though whether you should really be having conversations on Twitter. I just
it's a terrible
the hell. It's a terrible platform for conversations.
Yeah, I've
Liz. Why should we save Twitter?
Well, if I think we're having this conversation and it's great in this little. World that we live in where
Bubble.
Donald Trump hasn't been mentioned, but Donald Trump needs to be mentioned, right? And like, this is where the discourse
we
of
should save
our
it for
world is
wrong.
We should save it for the president.
Did you notice that like now Jimmy Fallon does an impression of Alec Baldwin doing an impression of Donald Trump? Like,
all my impressions are of people doing impressions of the person I'm impressing. Because it's easier.
It's impressive.
It's impressive, I know.
I don't know. Maybe their monetization model can be like all the people in the world who have now set up mobile notifications for whenever Donald Trump tweets to find out if their world is falling apart.
It's kind of important, actually. You're right. What's interesting is every president, going back to FDR, has wanted a way to directly address the electorate.
Yeah.
FDR did fireside chats, the brand new medium of radio. He used it masterfully, right? In fact, presidents still do radio addresses. I don't know if Trump has done that, but up until Trump, everybody was doing radio addresses.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to find a way to talk to the people directly. And this is, I mean, he's a master of this medium. I mean, it's arguably one of the reasons he got elected is his mastery of Twitter.
But yeah, it's a two-edged sword, though. The one of the biggest things I've ever written was actually for Recode. I wrote it for Medium. Recode picked, asked if they could repost it. But it was how to get into the filter bubble of people who are fans of Trump. And that is simply that if you can post a reply to his tweets within 5 seconds,
you'll hear
his fans will see it. And so this is a powerful thing. I mean, when the president posts something, he has direct access to 20 whatever million people. And then those people see the resistance come flooding in. And so it's a double-edged sword for him. Yes, he gets to talk to everybody, but he also has to be exposed to every single post he has. It's followed by thousands of people slamming and criticizing him.
Yeah.
And
so when you look at and I presume this is not at POTUS, this is at real Donald Trump that you're talking about.
When I wrote it, that he wasn't president yet. Yeah.
So if you look at the tweets, you see his tweets. But if you go to tweets and replies, which I'm not going to do.
Yeah.
Or if you click on one of the tweets individually.
Yeah. You'll see.
It's like 4chan in there.
Yeah. I don't know. Is that a valuable discussion? I don't think that forwards anything, does it?
I don't think it's a valuable discussion, but I think that the whole Trump phenomenon is separate from the issue of harassment in general. The thing that concerns me about harassment is when people make the decision where they're trying to have a voice and they get to the point where, like, you know what? Twitter is so toxic, I'm just going to stop talking in public.
That's kind of what I do.
And their voice is silenced. Your voice is silenced.
Well, that's fine. That's not, I mean, well, believe me, I'm the last person you'd say anything about silenced. But,
I mean, but if you didn't have a this huge podcast
400 hours a week on the air, yeah, I guess.
Exactly.
I don't know. Is Twitter a place people should go to have their voice heard?
It's a broadcast. I think it is more of a broadcast or narrow cast medium than it is a conversational.
Even if you tweet, though, the chances are, I mean, however many followers you have, that only a fraction of them are going to see that tweet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a mixed bag.
Because you have to be there at the right time.
I mean, Tanya was telling me earlier that you suddenly decided you like Google Plus, which I find, totally incredulous about that.
Maybe it's just me, but my Google Plus has gotten great now that
it's
everybody
awesome.
Left.
Nobody's there.
Exactly.
It's so much better. It used to be the place if you wanted to.
I didn't know it still existed.
But it's a harassment-free zone. This is what I was saying back when everybody was.
It always has been. Because even though they no longer have a real names policy, it's kind of built into it in such a way that it still has that.
It's also, if you're in tech, it's a great place.
Oh,
if you're a tech or photographer.
If you're an Android fan, it's like unbelievable.
Well, it's all developers,
that's
you know,
how I use
people
Reddit.
And journalists.
And scientists.
So, I use Reddit because I follow the Reddit tech stories. So Reddit is a great tech feed for me.
I don't
see all that other stuff, thank God. But if I go to Reddit, I'm going to learn about my grandmother's handmade quilt.
Yeah,
I don't know. The ones I follow tend
that's the
to
tech
be
section?
No. In fact, that's political humor or something. But actually, that's I think Reddit's surfacing that as something that I'm not necessarily following. But I'm not logged in. That's why. There you go.
Grandma.
This is just the generic. By the way, Reddit's very careful on this front page when you are not logged in, not to show anything controversial.
Yeah.
Reddit is fantastic, but it's not. I think Reddit is better for.
I wouldn't want my mom
stories.
To go to Reddit. It's too easy to see stuff you wish you hadn't, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not as bad as Twitter, though, because on Reddit, if you're on
the best place for me for geeks, Hacker News is a great feed.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes.
I only see things I really am interested in.
It's basically like the command line of news. You know.
But that just shows you that social networks maybe are best when they're not universal.
Absolutely.
But,
you're segregating into topics you're interested
my
in.
My little corner of the world.
Yeah.
But Twitter succeeds because it is, is it universal? It's not, it's still only a few hundred million people at best.
It's primarily media and journalists, and it's an echo chamber for sure, but it's very culturally relevant for that reason. Culturally relevant people and, high prominent people, TV shows, Everybody, all those kinds of people use Twitter and have big accounts. Right. Also singers and actors and so on. If you look at the top 100, it's like 80% Beyoncé's and singers and so
on. Isn't it? It's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like watching TV and hoping for a high-speed chase. It's really most interesting when it goes off the rails. Like when Lady Gaga gets upset about her neighbor and starts tweeting crazy stuff. Yeah. That's when it's, that's what you're hoping for. Yep. It's like watching the Indy 500. You're really...
Or watching celebrities troll each other. Like Hillary Clinton trolled Trump after the, you know,
3-2-0
And then Kellyanne Conway trolling Hillary Clinton, you know, for that.
You know,
I think it's worth recognizing that, like, Trump has been president for 3 weeks and Twitter has completely changed in those 3 weeks.
Isn't
like
that
this conversation is in some ways like dated because there's this weird thing going on where like we're all talking about the same stuff at the same time. And maybe I'm like deluding myself into believing that, but I do actually believe that for the first time we're having a like national conversation because like whatever Trump did today, it's the most interesting and impactful thing that we're all dealing with in our lives.
And
for
it's usually
for
what
worse.
He said on Twitter, not what he
well,
said
he
in a press
Well, he gets up in the morning and he sets the agenda for the political conversation for the day. And it's very powerful and nobody can do anything about
and
it.
And like we all talk about how like there's no hits in anymore. There's no TV show that everyone's going to watch. Like we're all watching,
TV Twitter.
Show.
Yeah. Actually, my Facebook feed's kind of become that way as well. It's really it's become a news feed much more than it used to be.
Tell me you're going to get that hat, Leo.
I don't really even know why. This is my problem with Twitter is it's so contextless that it's just, I feel like I'm reading just completely random bits of.
Is that like a potato or a
It looks like an octopus on a top hat. And it's from some guy I must follow, right? I don't know. He's a social media nitwit and he's written a book called Pam Mastery. And a crime novel called Butterfly Stomp Waltz. And a science fiction novel. Wow, this guy's prolific. Called Hydrogen Sleets. And he likes punching Nazis. That's probably why I'm following him. I don't know why I'm following him. I don't know how that happened. That's the other thing that happens with Twitter, isn't it? You accumulate people.
Yes.
For reasons you don't remember.
I have Unfollow Friday. Like every Friday I go
in
and I clear out.
You though, and this is the other thing that I think is a problematic with Twitter, you can't, you used to be able to cultivate your feed and tilt it in a direction like, I'm just going to follow journalists, just follow tech journalists. You can't even do that anymore. Nobody sticks to the subject.
So can I share my philosophy of how to do social media? I basically don't think social media is a good place to get content at all. What I like to do is I like to use the old-fashioned way. You get some right-leaning publications.
I get Reason because I'm interested in a libertarian point of view. And
Yes News and Report is a kind of right leaning. There's a bunch of and then left leaning, and you get some centrist publications. And you get those content, and then you go and post, and then you engage with the people who reply to your posts, and that's your social media. I don't think it's a good place to just open yourself up to this fire hose of dreck that just comes pouring
in. I personally think the best thing every one of you listening could do, and all of us too, is just get off social media. Yeah. Period. And you just feel this lifting of a burden.
I saw a story today that said that if you stop watching TV and stop using social media,
the world's not so bad.
You'll have enough time to read 1,000 books a year.
Wow.
If you're an average American.
I've started to make that about cable news because I realized I was listening to a great interview on a podcast of all things. It was Alec Baldwin's Here's the Thing.
Oh,
great podcast. Love Alec Baldwin. And
he's an interrogator.
Yeah, he's a terrible interviewer.
He makes it all about himself.
He interrupts all the time, I know.
but he's interesting.
It's damn interesting.
He's also an ass. But.
And he interviewed a well-known journalist who said, I no longer watch cable news because it's not news. Duh.
Yeah.
You're filling a 24-hour news cycle. It's all punditry and opinion.
Because that's like entertaining. It's entertainment.
And your stress level, my blood pressure, when I don't watch cable news and I don't visit social media, is much, much better.
Leo, I'm reading a book right now called Deep Work by Cal Newport.
Yes.
Fantastic book. It's a few years old, but basically if you go to his Twitter feed, he literally has zero activity. He's never tweeted anything. But he talks about how what the digital movement has done is it's done two simultaneously crazy things. It's made the value of what he calls deep work, which is where you really sit down and think without distraction, far more valuable. Yeah. But it's also put all this pressure on people to do shallow work. So people who used to do deep work, like journalists, they're now being pressured by their organizations to go out and be tweeting all the time, which is shallow work. And so there's this huge opportunity for people to think deeply and doing deep work because nobody's doing it, and the value of it is through the roof. And the value of shallow work is just very, very low and getting lower all the time. You guys do long-form stuff.
For exactly that reason.
Super valuable stuff. And you can't do long-form journalism well if you're, like, checking Twitter every 5 seconds and you're being distracted and you have the news going and all this kind of stuff. You can't do it. You have to, like, have a quiet room. You have to do some serious thinking. You have to do some serious digging. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And so I recommend that everybody read this
book. I was just listening to an episode of Reply All today where they were talking about, they interviewed a guy who has ALS and has to type with his eyes, and he was talking about how he actually feels like he's been reborn as like a thinker because he used to be, used to do so many things that are not even possible to do at the speed he can do now that he can really, really engage in the world.
Maybe handwriting would be another. For me, I'd probably type write about as slowly as he can type. Because my handwriting's so terrible. I think of Stephen Levy, who's one of my favorite journalists, has been on this show. He says he's a slow news writer. Just like slow food, right?
Yep.
That's the new cooking thing, new restaurant, slow food. Hey, let's take a break, and I want to talk about IT Pro TV, and then we'll continue. Great panel here. Jason Heiner from Tech Republic and CBS Interactive. Always a pleasure to have you. Why are you out? Are you out for RSA? Or?
Yeah, I'm here for RSA.
A lot of people in the studio audience, too. Programmers, coders, a couple of guys from CodeBlocks podcast who are here for RSA, the big security conference in San Francisco. This is always a fun time of year because, as Mike Elgin pointed out, it's also Beer Week.
Beer Week.
In San Francisco.
There's something like, I think there are 180 breweries represented in restaurants throughout the city. So check out the Beer Week.
What is it about programmers and beer? They're a natural kind of symbiotic.
They're like journalists. They're a bunch of drunks. No offense.
Well, no, but it could be wine. I guess it's programmers like whiskey and beer, right? Yeah, they're nodding. Okay, I got it right. Liz Gaines is also here from 60db.co. We were talking about that earlier. I love it. 60db.co.
Thanks.
And I want to hear more about your journalism fellowship. What a great, that sounds like a great thing. Did you have to apply for that?
Yeah, you do. But it's worth it. I mean, in this field where, like, people are turning us away, laying people off, buying people out, to have someone, like, invest in, like, allow you to live on a stipend for a year.
Is there a grant? Who's the
Knight Foundation.
Ah.
Yeah.
So, of course, our great friend Jeff Jarvis, who co-hosts This Week in Google, works at the Town Knight School of Journalism.
Yeah.
In CUNY,
you see
the Knight Foundation.
Yeah, but then there's also the Nike Knight guy. So, like, everything in the world now is in
yours
by a Knight.
Yours not Phil Knight. Yours is the other
John
Knight.
John S. Knight in this one. Yeah, okay. As in Knight Ritter. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you do
actually,
have to ask,
being
don't
at
you?
Stanford last year, yeah, it's confusing because he paid for, like, the whole business school.
Are there the Phil Knight Business School?
Dueling Knights.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's funny.
We could have Baryshnikov make a new movie. I don't know. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. The guys are in studio. They're around somewhere. Tim and Don, the founders of IT Pro TV. Well, maybe they're out drinking beer. Maybe they're doing that. They're also in town for the RSA conference. They cover it on IT Pro TV. So here's another way you can get your coverage of RSA. They do a lot of interviews all week long at RSA. What is IT Pro TV? It's actually a really cool idea. I think Tim and Don saw what we do here at Twit. They were fans of Tech TV. They said, somebody ought to do something like that for online IT training, for keeping your IT skills up, for learning. And that's why they created IT Pro TV. They have they have five studios in Gainesville, Florida. They are doing Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, video. They do it much like we do. They have chat rooms going on. But the subject matter is all the stuff you need to know, either if you want to get the IT certifications or you want to keep up to date. They offer 2,000 hours of content, 30 new hours every week. You can watch it on your Chromecast, your Roku, your Amazon Fire TV. They have a great Apple TV app. Of course, you could stream it on your PC or tablet. Courses include things like Certified Information Systems Security Professional, CompTIA's Project Plus, in fact, all the CompTIA certs. One of my favorites is Certified Ethical Hacker. I want to be this when I grow up. Ethical Hacking, they got version 9 just went up. Sean Ariano has been teaching that, and they have others, some of the best people in security teaching this. So you can, you'd be guaranteed a job, right? If you knew this stuff, you would be guaranteed. Upcoming courses, AWS Solutions, Pen Testing, Networking Plus. We had one of our detectives from the Petaluma Police Department came to me and said, I'm now in charge of forensics. I need to learn how to use Wireshark. I said, I'll tell you exactly where you go to learn Wireshark, IT Pro TV. In fact, I can't tell you the the commercial customers because they're customer, they don't want to, you know, tell everybody. But I can tell you that for some reason the universities don't mind. The entire Harvard IT department subscribes to IT Pro TV. So does MIT. So does UCSD. So does Stanford, Liz. Everybody knows this is the best way to keep those skills up to date. They have a low monthly subscription price. And because they started giving, you know, teaching people to get the certs, they have an easy, no-hassle cancellation policy. But you know what? I think even if you get the cert and you get the job, you're going to continue to become a member and continue to watch because it's fun. Premium annual memberships, $57 a month. Or you get 2 months free if you subscribe for a year. But we got a special deal. Of course we do. For a free 7-day trial so you can see exactly what it's like for a whole week. 30% off for the lifetime of your account. Go to itpro.tv/twit. And the offer code is twit30. 30% off for the life, forever, for the life of your account. Could be years. And a free 7-day trial so you can see what it's like before you buy. By the way, IT Pro TV is in process of introducing a new membership level. They're going to do that soon. And now's the time to sign up because you'll be guaranteed, if you're a premium member and at that time, you'll be granted the highest membership level available. You'll automatically be upgraded at the same price. So sign up today, itpro.tv/twit, the offer code twit30. We're talking high tech. We're talking the world of technology. I'm just going to, a little parenthetically, I got the new Android Wear 2.0 watch. Isn't that attractive? Isn't that lovely? Don't I look like a prisoner on work furlough?
It's huge.
Just. Okay. And by the way, not only is it ugly, it's uncomfortable as heck because this is the Sport, the LG Sport.
Yeah. It's like an inch off your wrist.
It's enormous.
It's huge. And it doesn't stop at the watch. In the band, they put the antennas, so the band is rigid halfway down your wrist, which means it really does feel like one of those work furlough bracelets. I won't tell you how I know that, but it's not comfortable. You can't change the band. It's like rubber, and I'm not impressed by Android Wear 2.0. They've added some nice features, but I can make phone calls from this, by the way. It has a SIM card and a phone number. My watch has its own phone number.
But would you want to?
Yeah, well, you look kind of dorky going... Dick Tracy.
Why pay for one account on AT&T?
Oh, yeah.
Pay for two.
Exactly.
Like, who's going to
exactly.
All the redundant internet we pay for is just like, at some point, it's crazy.
Weren't electronics supposed to get smaller over time?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot in here. I mean, it has a barometer.
It's so much bigger than the Samsung. That's what I don't quite understand.
And that does all of that.
It does.
Right?
The Gear S3 does. It has... a SIM card in it. It's literally half as thick as that.
Yeah.
Do you have to watch out to not twist the band too much? Because there's
I don't know. I mean, you could feel the antennas are going right down here. I don't know how fragile that is, but I can't wait to stop wearing it.
A good sign.
I think you just did stop wearing it.
Well, it does feel good when you take it off. There's something to say about it.
It's funny, when the whole smartwatch thing started,
I
felt like I quit wearing watches like 10 years ago, or maybe not quite that long.
Apple trained us not to wear
exactly
a watch.
The smartphone made it unnecessary. And I started wearing the Apple Watch. I'm still wearing it. One of the ten people I knew that got it was the only one still wearing it. But the only reason was, and I hated wearing a watch. And so the only reason I kept wearing it was because it was comfortable. The band is actually, the cheap band is actually really comfortable. And then there's only, but they pitched this all wrong with smartwatches. I feel like they pitch it as like you're going to have this computer on your wrist. And that was their whole...
And what would you say?
Their whole thing. I think it's a slightly smarter Fitbit. It's just...
Yeah.
It's
and a Fitbit is just a slightly smarter pedometer.
Right.
So you're really not... You're not making a lot of progress here.
It's
You're still... If you were... This is the ascent of man. You're still on your knuckle walking.
The visuals for the exercise stuff are slightly better. The circles, right? That's slightly better.
Circles works for me because I see other people's circles and it motivates me to get off my duff. So the social network aspect of it actually is the only thing I think that's strong about the Apple Watch.
Other than that, the only thing I use it for is the alerts. It is nice not having to pull your phone out of your pocket for me because it makes me easier to ignore things. And then having the weather on it. I have the one thing that that's all I use it for. But I had a Fitbit before, so it's a slightly smarter Fitbit.
The promise of these was you would take your phone out less often because you could look at your watch. But what I find is the watch is just like so brief that I'll go, oh, that notification. I better read that, and I take my phone out. Right. So I'm now doubly annoying.
Well, somebody asked me the time, and I take my phone out, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, I have a watch.
Yeah, I think this
forget.
This category
I do mine less. I will say I ignore a lot more things by not
The interesting thing is that I think even Apple, although Tim Cook on the analyst call last week did say that the watch had its biggest revenue quarter ever. Mm.
I did see a lot of people hopping on the late adopter train this past 6 months.
Yeah.
But since they don't give us numbers, it's not really a meaningful thing. It was our biggest quarter ever. I mean, they sold twice as many?
It reminds me of when Amazon was bragging about the Echo in the first year or so. Yeah. And you're like, what does that mean?
More than last year when we didn't sell it.
Right.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing with the Apple Watch is it is meaningful. Some of the third-party people that track it have said that it is now next to, they are the number one vendor watch selling, number two watch selling
after
vendor
Fitbit.
In the world. Well, if you don't count Fitbit as a watch, if you count watches.
Who's number one? Swatch? Timex?
It's one of the Swiss watchmakers.
I just think that of all the smartwatches, absolutely the Apple Watch is better than Android Wear. This did not save Android Wear. Motorola already knew that. They dropped the 360 line entirely. And I'm not even convinced the Apple Watch is worth even.
I have a really stupid theory about why they're selling so well all of a sudden. And the theory is this. I think Apple fans see new stuff as a kind of crack cocaine. Every year or two, they need a new hit.
And they're not buying the MacBook.
They're not buying the MacBook because the MacBook sucks. The laptop, they've been waiting 4 years for a laptop.
They've actually sold a lot of those, though.
Yeah, but
a lot relative to Mac.
An interesting theory, probably completely wrong, but funny.
That was probably through pent-up demand.
It's their crack hit.
It's a crack cocaine. Theory.
It's a pretty good theory. It is a pretty good theory because there's not a whole lot to get excited about. The new Mac is sold really well. I'm using it, but it's mostly because of pent-up demand, I think, because I do know a lot of people that were waiting and they weren't thrilled with it. I think the Touch Bar, I don't use much of it, and it's more annoying than it is helpful.
Exactly. Ultimately. I keep hitting it by accident.
But I think if it integrates with more software, maybe there's some things on it that could
be
useful.
It's never going to be useful. Never.
But I just, right now, it's more annoying than useful to me. But this is a very light, this is a lot of power in a
You got the 13.
I have the 13. Yeah. So it's very similar to an Air, very similar weight. And it's a lot of power in a small laptop.
It's a great laptop, but so was the one that they came out with 4 years ago.
I think you'd be just as happy with the 2013.
I think so too.
And
higher powered version of it.
Yeah. I love the little things. I love the MagSafe thing a lot.
That was a big loss.
Killed that also.
That was a big loss.
Although I think Type C is the future. I'll stick with that. I want everything to be Type C. My phones, my laptops, everything should be Type C. Yeah. Trey Ratcliffe, our good friend and stellar photographer, wrote a blog post this week. Apple is dead to me. Now you got to remember, Trey is a Mac fanatic his whole photo career. Yeah. I'm switching to Windows. And I worry that this may be a trend among the
high end
users.
That's Leo says as he expands on his Surface
Windows. on my Windows 10 Surface, which
I'm seeing this again and again with video editors. My son does video editing. He does special effects and he does graphics, computer animation.
And he's using Windows.
The Macs.
The Mac Pro is three years old now. Right?
Yeah.
So this is what Trey got. He got I'm not sure I would have recommended this, but this is what he bought. Is an MSI, basically a desktop replacement laptop for $4,599. But the Apples top out at 16 gigs of RAM. This has 32. If you're a photographer, that's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
RAID hard drives with a terabyte spinning drive and a 256 gig SSD. It's got the NVIDIA Quadro, which is a video card artists and graphic designers use. It's probably not great for gaming, but it's got a lot of horsepower for graphics.
The funny thing is, because I still use Windows a lot too. The funny thing is when you go back and forth like from Mac, and I see this with a lot of people that have switched too, is you remember how buggy Windows is. Yeah. Even at it's like it drives me crazy because you throw all this power at it. Like a machine like this should just scream. Nothing should slow it down
until his first ransomware notice, and then it's all.
And then it's like you still it does weird Windows things where like things hang, things you know. Crash.
Yeah, he's in the honeymoon period,
and it's just like
I see a lot of Mac people do this where he's saying, "Oh, this isn't so bad." Right?
Yeah.
You wait.
Yeah, your expectation is it's going to be terrible. Now, you were the editor of Windows Magazine.
Yes. Yep.
You've been a long time sufferer.
And I still have habits from Windows that bug me when I'm using a Mac. Like, for example, when I do the sort of, what is it, the command tab thing to go
alt
through.
Alt tab?
Yeah, alt tab. And if the window is minimized, it doesn't maximize again.
That's really
it drives me nuts. It's like, really? I have to go like down to the... Little stuff like that really bugs me. But, you know, I think the thing to do, if you're going to use Windows, reformat it every month. And you're fine.
Yeah, it works great. Yeah.
It is cool that they built that into it, that it's easier to do that than ever. You know?
And you got to love the Surface Studio. I mean, this is really, this is an all-in-one, but it's a very niche-y product. I mean, we have a bunch of programmers in the studio. You're not going to sit here with a screen tilted at this angle programming. And if, you know, I love it for what I'm doing, but if you put it in its normal... This is no different than an iMac or any other all-in-one or a big screen.
Yeah, that's like saying like Wheel of Fortune is a really good format for putting letters up on a board.
Yeah, it is for that particular purpose. Yeah, actually, Tim Cook is traveling around Europe. Gave an interview this week to the Independent in London, in which he said, and this is interesting, that he thinks augmented reality is going to be as big a product category as the iPhone. And I thought that was telling because it's obvious, if you've been watching Apple's results, that they're looking for their next iPhone. The iPhone turned Apple from being a little computer company into being the most valuable company in the world.
Yeah, doesn't that comment sound kind of a little desperate? Because like they don't have a product there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, he's doing what Apple does so well.
Well, I thought you call it a hobby if you're not going to do it yet.
Yeah.
But I think what Apple does is... They use these interviews to kind of get people in the mindset. I think they're
creating demand, right?
We talked about this last week with Robert Scoble, who is a little cracked on this subject, but he's convinced that augmented reality is in Apple's future. And I think that it's interesting because I do feel like he feels that, you know, when he says something like that, that's not offhand. You know, Tim and Apple in general are very calculated about what they say.
I did a piece. This is related that on this week or Monday on Facebook, because I think Facebook is about. So Facebook is investing in this really heavily too.
Well, an Oculus Rift they bought.
Notice when they made the hire of Hugo. Hugo Barra from
he was at Google and then he went to Xiaomi. But he was a great demonstrator for Android.
Yeah.
He was a beloved figure on stage at Google.
Yeah.
Xiaomi, I think he might have been a little frustrated. He had to move to China. He's back.
Yeah.
I think he moved to India too, right?
He spent a lot of time in India
because Xiaomi was moving into India.
Yeah, that's where they were. All their sales were.
Yeah.
But you notice that when Mark Zuckerberg, you know, introduced him, he said he's going to be running all of our virtual reality stuff, including Oculus. Exactly. Mm. And so we've been hearing for a while that they're working really hard on augmented reality.
Yeah. See, the problem with augmented reality, though, is you can't... Zuckerberg can't sneak up on you because you can see the world. I love that picture of Zuckerberg sneaking up on all the people wearing their, Oculus Rifts.
Yeah. I mean, the way Facebook thinks of the world is they're like, oh my God, there are times when people are not looking at their screen. So the little red thing that tells you have new items.
How do we get them?
How do we get them to see that?
We'll find out in April. That's when F8, their developers conference, is coming up. And if they are going to make a move into AR, this is where they're going to make the announcement, I'm sure.
Think about their database of people, of companies, of places, of all those things. And then you think about that feeding an augmented reality product.
Hell yeah. I want to be remarkable. Walking around and I see Jason Heiner and I see your feed pop up. I know the name of your wife, your kids. I know
that
everything
article
about
I
you.
Just posted about whatever.
You can say, hey,
I loved your new thing you wrote about.
Because I'm reading it while I'm talking to you. But now the interesting thing I realized is that for augmented reality, we always think of the HoloLens and glasses and VR kind of stuff. But Apple's AirPods are definitely, as we've talked about before, wearables,
They're
more than just headphones. And augmented reality merely means you're taking the world and you're augmenting it. Could it be audio? Could it be telling me in my ear, oh, that's Jason Heiner? You've known him for years.
It will be audio and possibly also optionally video. But there are two little tiny startups that have it right, and their ideas are going to be stolen from them by the big companies. But one of them is called View. They're called View Glasses. I interviewed the founders there in San Francisco.
Didn't they just get acquired?
I don't think so. But if they did, it'll be news to me.
They were a Kickstarter.
They're Kickstarter. There's no video element other than a blinking light. So it's a red blink, that means mom is trying to reach me. And if it's a green light, that means the boss or whatever. And then they have an app, of course. And then it's bone conduction on each side. The battery lasts 3 days or something.
Smart glasses.
Oh, I'm sorry. And, the audio. Let me cut that.
And this is what they're trying to get away from.
This is Mike Elgin wearing Google Glass.
That's right. That's right.
And that's somebody wearing a visor. Yeah. But this is the premise here, is
the
that
premise.
You would get
it
some
looks
vision.
Less
and
awkward. This is,
I want it to look
they look like
real
regular glasses. Yeah. And they can be prescription. They can be sunglasses. Yeah. They can be any glasses.
But it's audio only.
It's audio only plus a blinking light. But that audio is a killer feature.
Yeah.
Because we're entering into the realm of genuine AI virtual assistants. And we're going to be chattering with them. One way is the Amazon Echo way, where you have a device in every bathroom and everything. The other one is it's always on you. And you just talk and you hear back. But it doesn't cover your ears, and it doesn't have a battery life that dies in 4 hours. There's another company from a
high
school.
This looks like a great product.
Yeah. There's a high school student in the Midwest who came out with another product that he's kickstarting, and I think he's going to have a successful Kickstarter. And I'm trying to remember what the name of the product is. Chat room, if you can remember. But basically, it's a thing that clips onto any glasses and gives you bone conduction access to Hound, to Sound Hound. And which is a great virtual assistant that's underrepresented.
Right, it's like the alternative to the big companies.
Right.
And anyone can incorporate it into their products, right?
Exactly. And this kid, he's a senior in high school.
Unfortunately, I did a search and I found student brings AR-15 rifle to high school.
So that's a different kind of AR.
The AR we're talking.
KAI.
KAI.
And smart glasses. And anyway, I talked to this kid, and he's a really sharp kid. He's about to go off to university, but the idea that he's got there,
I think this is a high school kid. He raised
high school.
He didn't make it, by the way.
He's having
a manufacturer. He still has till March.
Yeah.
So he's got 20,000 of 55,000, but he still has 30 days to go on this.
So yeah. It's a dongle that you clip onto your glasses.
The only thing that's patented. It gives you sound out through bone conduction. So there's a microphone, a speaker.
I love that this is a high school kid.
Yeah. And then on your phone, you can look and see what SoundHound has found.
No, it'll tell you in Audible. It's like Amazon Echo or Siri.
This does not work very well right now in the AirPods, because the AirPods you double tap and Siri line. It's a terrible interface. Yeah. In fact, I'm really unhappy with the AirPods. I loved them at first.
Yeah.
But after dropping almost every call I've made with the AirPods, I've just given up on them. They're just not that good. They're fine for listening to music.
So here's my theory about smart glasses and companies like Apple and Facebook. So the best place to put something like Siri or Alexa is on glasses through bone conduction.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay, so that's the baseline. That already is a killer app right there.
I would buy that right now. Yeah.
Then if you can throw something onto the screen that's maybe a subtle cue of something like that, Scoble said that Apple's working with Carl Zeiss. I don't know if that's true or not, but Carl Zeiss has great technology. We talked about it on the show. But just even if there's no visuals at all, even if there's no camera at all.
No, do the AirPod capability, but build it in the glasses.
Exactly. Ears open.
Interesting.
Battery life lasts 3 days.
Interesting.
You can do it in a prescription glasses or sunglasses or any glasses, and that's killer. So that's what I think. And I think that these little startups, what always happens is the little startups do killer ideas and then the big companies come and steal them.
Well, I often wonder if a big company is really positioned to take advantage of these disruptive new technologies. Doesn't it always come from the little guy?
Actually, it always comes. So there's a couple of misnomers about that. It always comes from small teams. Pretty much every good innovation has always come from a small team. And a lot of times it's a startup, right? But it's also a lot of times it's small teams.
Well, that's
inside
why Google
big
does
companies.
That, don't they? They're really trying to create this environment
what Apple
where
does
it feels
too.
Like a startup. Apple does that too.
The iPhone was worked on. I talked to last year a lot with the guy who was on the team that created the iPhone. He said it was like 25 of us.
Here's the other thing that's shocking about this whole bone conduction idea for glasses. There is no new technology there. None. Bone conduction's been around forever. It's a microphone. Visual.
This is like this. You have to kind of strip away what you think of as augmented reality to say you're not looking at the world and seeing something projected on it.
All the technology's in the cloud, and that's
kind of my point. And I think people, when Tim Cook says augmented reality, think HoloLens, something like HoloLens.
Right.
But they've got the AirPods already. I could see them doing something like this. This is
an interesting thought. It really is.
I might think it like the what might first come to mind for me is like an Alexa in your ear or on your glasses kind of thing. I wouldn't say Siri because I don't find Siri very helpful.
Siri's useless, yeah. Here's somebody who's taken on the HoloLens and put Portal on it. Wouldn't it be fun to play Portal in your living room, blow holes in your floor, drop companion cubes through holes in your floor and out your ceiling? I love this. I don't know if this is real or... But this is an article in the next web. Portal for Microsoft HoloLens makes real life look great again. I don't know what look at that. Now that's hard to do. That's the companion cube is rolling down real stairs.
Yeah.
That's not easy. So this is Kenny W, who's an AR game maker, and I guess he showed this on Reddit, but I don't know if he was actually doing this on a HoloLens. Wow. Because it's in Unity 3D, Portal is in Unity 3D, I remember Microsoft saying all Unity apps can easily be ported to the HoloLens.
Hmm.
Interesting.
I can't get that excited about throwing things down.
Oh, come on! It's like... Come on! All right,
go ahead. I was going to make a crack about men. How you like to throw things and that's satisfying.
Plenty of time.
Yep.
Well, what would be the perfect game for you, Liz Gaines? I mean, what would you like to do in virtual reality?
I'll get back to you.
Do you ever play games?
I play a lot of Dots on my iPhone.
See, Dots would be great. Yeah, my wife plays Dots like crazy. Right? Isn't that what you're playing? No, she's laughing at me. I'm not playing Dots. I'm playing Bots. It's like Dots, but they're square.
I actually like Dots while I'm listening to something that I want to be intellectually engaged in because it keeps my mind focused.
That's what she does because she's ADD. So she does this, and that's occupying that little corner of her brain that would be wandering.
Which
that's
is like kind of the opposite of gaming, right? But like for me, it scratches an itch.
I kind of do that with Words with Friends. I've like taken a lot of my social media time and I like put it into Words with Friends lately.
That's not a bad thing to do. I see you pop up all the time.
Much happier.
I'm afraid you would beat the pants off me, so I don't play with you. All right, we're going to talk more about tech with our great panel, Liz Gaines from 60db.co, from becomingnomad.com, the great Mike Elgin. We on the new Screensavers on Saturday, we played a little bit of that. Keep talking and nobody blows up.
That was fun.
That was really
so fun.
I think it might be more fun for us playing it than it is for the people at home watching it, but I don't care. I don't care because it's a VR game that's just a blast. And Jason Heiner from CBS Interactive. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. It's a product from Quicken Loans, the best mortgage lender in the country. And you don't have to take my word for it. Look at the website, all the J.D. Power customer satisfaction awards year after year. But there was something missing. They were happy, they were doing a great job, but they realized that they could make it even better by making it entirely online. They knew there was a crowd out there, people who listen to the show are a good example, who don't want to go to a mortgage lender, who don't want to go through boxes of papers to find check stubs and bank statements, who want to do it all on their phone. And so they created Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. It is an entirely online approval process. And because it's computers, because it's online, it's fast. You can think they have a video on the website of a couple at a open house looking at it and saying, honey, we should buy this. And they go and they do the mortgage pro, and then they show it to the realtor. Well, we're approved. You can actually submit pay stubs, submit back statements all online. You don't have to bring them papers. You can do the whole thing, and because of computers, it happens in minutes. They have settings that you can change the rate. You can play with the rate and the time frame and all that stuff. So it really is personalized for you. Get a personalized loan from a great mortgage lender that fits your exact financial situation, and it's completely transparent and completely online. It's Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online. QuickenLoans.com/twit. And the number 2, quickenloans.com/twit2, equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, NMLS consumeraccess.org, number 3030. from Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/twit. Two, we thank them for their support.
I've used them a couple times, actually.
Rocket Mortgage?
Quicken Loans.
Oh, Quicken Loans,
a couple times. I've done a couple times without them and a couple times with them. They're by far the most tech savvy. Yeah,
how many houses
mortgage.
Do you buy?
Well, yeah, I mean, from moving, one of those was a refinance, but yeah.
They're actually the
you think he writes about tech.
Yeah,
but
right.
Really.
He's probably flipping houses.
I wish I was actually savvy.
That's what Clay Morris is doing.
I heard that on the last
show. He's become like this big house flipper guy.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, his point is good that lots of the financial markets go up and down, but real estate has stayed the same. It's really been like that from the beginning in this country. You know, people used to say that they invested in real estate instead of cash because our cash wasn't very good at first because it was worth more than money.
Yeah.
Did you see the movie The Founder?
No.
About Ray Kroc, founder of McDonald's.
It's so good.
But there's a revelatory moment where he's sort of working for the McDonald's brothers and he has no power at all.
He was a milkshake mixer salesman.
And so he talked them into allowing him to run this franchise.
Everyone should have one.
He had this franchising business. He had no power. He's making no money. He was totally failing. And then some sharp kid came in and he hired him. And he's like, you know, you're in the wrong business. What you got to do is buy the land and then lease it to the franchisees. And the next thing you know, the McDonald's brothers, what they owned was one hamburger shop, and he owned 400 of them.
Yeah.
And he started telling them what to do. Yeah. And, you know, it's a great point.
That was my first job in high school.
McDonald's?
Working at McDonald's. I worked at McDonald's for years, and it was actually a great first job. They taught me that it's okay to work. You can't, like they said, you don't, what are you doing, sitting around? You wipe down something. don't just sit around. You're always doing something. Yeah. It was actually, and it was fun.
We wrote about that in Follow the Geeks.
You did?
Yes.
I should.
The McDonald's story's in there.
Plug. I know I'm bad. I'm getting old. I'm repeating my story. Stop listening to me. Just read Follow the Geeks. You'll know everything I'm going to say for the next 3 years. thank you for writing that. That was fun. Is that book still
fun.
Out? Still
Absolutely.
Doing well?
Yeah, it's doing great. It's Audible, Kindle, and paper.
Did you do the Audible?
I did do the Audible. Yeah.
Awesome. What was that experience like? I only listen to books where the author reads them.
Really? Yeah, it's fun.
That's a mixed blessing.
It can
Some authors
be.
Should not read.
Yeah.
But you've got
like
a lot
a memoir,
of on-air experience.
It's really great to hear it in
no,
their voice.
No, if it's a performer.
Like actually, I listen to all these, there's this whole school of books of female comedians who write memoirs.
Yeah.
Well,
Sarah
they're like
Silverman.
Way too young to write memoirs.
Yeah.
I just listened to Anna Kendricks, and she's done a lot in her life, a lot more than me, but
she's
early
young.
In her career, and she was a fantastic narrator. Like, her voice acting
Several
is just
I've
like
heard
so.
Say
m-
that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I just loved
she started
it.
Started out on Broadway or something, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. And
Same
so,
a kid. She was
absolutely.
A kid.
And she talks about that in her memoir because that's her life. But she, I was really surprised versus I don't know, some other ones like Amy Poehler's, I found Anna Kendrick, I was really into.
Daniel Suarez has a new book coming out. You know, he did Freedom TM, and we just love his stuff. And he does not read his own books on Audible, but he's got a guy who reads all of his books who's fantastic. And Daniel, all no disrespect, was one of my favorite writers, and we're going to interview him on Triangulation with his new book, but I'm glad he doesn't read them. he has this great, he brought his narrator in. The last time we interviewed him, he brought the guy who reads his books on Audible. And there was something magical. He sat down, go back and look at that one.
That's
kind of
cool. I feel like it's like a person locked in a soundproof closet.
Well, it is.
That, you know,
fact,
like they actually get to come up to the level of the author.
It comes out
cool.
to the impression.
It takes so
but
long
he was
to
sitting
read,
there and he sat and I said, okay, well, read some. And you're transported immediately. Oh, you hear the voice, you hear the sound. You're in the middle of the novel. And the guy is such a good actor, a good reader. Really is, and this is not an Audible ad. Somehow we did an Audible ad without doing it, without being paid. But a good reader really can make a difference.
Yeah, but the Audible one has been, I think, because there's so many people that were involved in podcasting in my book, in Follow the Geeks, it's by far Audible version has been the most popular.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I believe.
Yeah. Do you voice the whole thing or did you get people to come on and do it?
No, I read the whole thing. Actually,
you should have forced all your subjects to do
get
their own chapters.
On. Ohm is in it, and actually Liz, so actually you're in the chapter on Ohm, because they talk about the early
He loves to talk about the Starbucks. Is that it? It's like your McDonald's store. It was formative.
Did Ohm work at Starbucks? No, but he was at a Starbucks when he started Gig Off.
And they named him Employee of the Month.
Did they really?
Yeah, when he started.
He must have lived
there.
He
was really proud of that, the fact that he was
like, Battery and Clay in San Francisco.
That is so funny.
You got
funny.
To meet Ronald McDonald. It was a big moment.
Yes.
Not the other one across the street.
There is a hamburger.
In that neighborhood, there's
There is
50.
A hamburger you know. The Hamburger University. When I was, I'm working at McDonald's in high school. I didn't tell you this part. And I had to really make the decision, Yale University or Hamburger U. And I wasn't sure which way to go. Yeah. And I finally went with Yale. And that's when I stopped working at McDonald's.
Well,
they said,
better.
You can't come back. You don't want to work here. You don't want to be a manager. Said, no, I have higher aspirations. Little did I know, I'd end up a podcaster. Hashtags. Did you watch the Super Bowl last Sunday? We ran home after the show, and I got the second half, and we have a number of people in the studio from Atlanta. I'm sorry. But what a game, right?
Atlanta played great.
Atlanta played great right up till they didn't. And then...
They were really only... I mean, like three different points. They were one play away from closing the game, closing it out.
It was
an unbelievable
game. Our audience couldn't care less about football, but we're going to talk about it for just a second. The sad story, of course, is that Atlanta's offensive coordinator, Kyle Shanahan, really was the one who blew that game by, instead of running down the clock and doing a lot of running plays, decided for some reason no one understands to go to the air and basically lost the game for him. He's our new coach in San Francisco at the 49ers. So we're really glad to have you, Kyle. Looking forward to great things.
It's been really nice that the 49ers have been so bad. I resolved that I'm like morally against football because of the concussion problem.
Oh, you should be. You're right.
Also other things that, morally reprehensible that players.
A lot of domestic abuse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I decided I was going to stop watching football, and then there was like
they
no one
terrible.
Even cares here. Like, no, like the stadium
no
is
one
empty
talks about
during
it.
The games.
Yeah.
Really?
And it's
if
like
you
the
go
most
to a
expensive
Niners
ticket
game,
in football.
Yep. Yeah. It's in Silicon Valley. Yeah. If you go to a Niners game, it's almost always filled with the opposing team's fans.
It's gotten that bad.
Who bought them for cheap on
they sell their tickets. Yeah. I'm not going to see
They
that.
Have the away team advantage.
If they can get there, it's
amazing. Well, the last game of the season, Seahawks game, you might as well have been in Seattle. I mean, there were no 49ers fans there. Why would they be?
Fair weather fans.
Anyway.
Food at the stadium is good, though.
If you can get to... get me started. So, hashtags in the Super Bowl, in the ads, slipped 30%. Is that bad? Is that more bad news for Twitter?
Hashtags slipped 30%.
That was the big thing. You couldn't have an ad for a while. You couldn't have an ad in a Super Bowl without a hashtag.
I think it's part of the harassment problem. I think people hijack hashtags.
Oh. And you don't want to be part of that.
Right, yeah. Especially a high visibility
ones
like this.
Better to own your domain that you're telling everyone to
so
go to.
So that's what they do. Yeah. URL use
it's funny
went
now,
up.
Now that you say that, we wrote an article like before the Super Bowl of like how your brand can use the Super Bowl hashtag. You use your brand to insert yourself
hijack.
In the conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Of 66 Super Bowl ads, only 5 use their Twitter handles. Only 4 use their Facebook handles.
Huh.
Hmm. So...
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's a big shift.
Twitter's a tainted brand, man.
Somebody from marketing land has to sit down and watch the whole game and count hashtags. It's got to be
man. That's what that intern,
I think it's one of their writers.
They're watching it anyway. Yeah.
And they got a graph.
Someone volunteered for that job.
Yeah.
I'd like to watch and count hashtags, please.
Thank God for TiVo, and at least you can. Avo Secrets. You're right.
I did listen to the end of the game, I'll admit. I went against my band and listened to the end on TuneIn, which brought me a Atlanta area station, which had not sold any streaming ads. So we had like Pink Panther music every time that you went to commercial. It was like the opposite of the television
experience.
That
is something we need to solve. That is something. Like I listen to CNN on TuneIn.
Yeah.
And the worst repetitive bad ads, and I'm sure that's all they could sell. We've got to solve that. You watching TV on Hulu is unwatchable.
I have a solution.
It's the same damn Captain Obvious ad over and over and
over. Here's the solution. Yeah. 60 dB should make commercials or shows that are just that length, and then they can insert them into the commercial spaces.
That's smart. You know, you got to think creatively. I listened to a story on 60 dB on Marketplace this past week creative marketers are buying ads on Morning Joe, which is like a relatively cheap buy because that's how you reach the president. You know that he watches cable news.
Huh.
Huh. Wow. Why? So what are they advertising?
Gold whatever plated, they want gold to. Plated whatever you need the attention of the... No, no, no. Not like to buy his stuff. Like to influence his policy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Mm. Interesting. That's fascinating.
And then he goes on and says, everybody is saying, and then whatever he saw on the ad.
There was an ad, I'm told, for Gorsuch, the Supreme Court justice nominee.
Wow.
They're running ads.
The administration is?
Yes. Or somebody is. Probably a pack.
I mean, in the slots that they pulled for the Obamacare ads.
That's right.
Trump. Yeah.
The House has done something good. They passed the Email Privacy Act. We've got to praise them for that. This was a weird artifact for a long time of the Electronic Communications Privacy Act was that any email on a server longer than 180 days was considered abandoned by the user, and law enforcement didn't need a warrant to see it. It's like, well, you left it there for 6 months. You obviously didn't want it anymore. But times change. People do leave their email on the Gmail server for years. I've got every email I've ever received at Gmail for almost 11 years, right? That's so what you do with it.
House passes, Senate yet to vote, but they're going to be done with the confirmation hearings in what, like a year?
Yeah.
So we'll see if this actually goes into law.
I don't think the Senate's going to pass it. I don't think they will.
So the bill updates it to say that, no, you should have to get a warrant to access emails, social media posts, and any online content that is more than 180 days old. There shouldn't be a sunset. But you're saying the Senate, which has yet to vote, will not approve this?
I'm saying that the president was elected on a platform that had a lot to do with law and order over privacy, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so I think that the zeitgeist, at least in Washington, D.C. right now, is let's not do anything that ties the hands of law enforcement when they're trying to...
But why would the House pass it?
That's a good question.
In fact, I was surprised that the House passed it.
Yeah, me too.
I was just working on a story for tomorrow about Axios, the new outlet, which is really great, coming out of D.C.
Okay, you got to explain Axios to me, impressive. Because yeah, so it's by the guy who started Politico, right? Or one of its editors?
Ina Fried got poached.
Yeah, she starts Monday.
I saw Ina goes there, given me some encouragement.
Yeah.
But I worry a little bit about it.
Tell me.
Yeah.
Well, what is their agenda?
They've been launched for what, like 3 weeks? And I read their email first. The first thing I read in the morning.
It's going to take 5 seconds.
Yeah. This is their thing. Instead of paragraphs, they do bullet points. And they have scoops in those bullet points.
This is actually
what to pay attention to.
This is how I started my career in journalism, actually. When I was at UCLA, I was a political science major. And I noticed that so many of my fellow politicals, I was an obsessive reader of the New York Times and all this other stuff, but most students don't read newspapers. And I'm thinking, come on, you're international relations students. You should be up on what's happening in international relations. And so I created something just like Axios, although it was on paper.
There's your mistake.
Summarized every major story and distributed it and sold it basically to other students at UCLA, and it was like a godsend.
So Axios had a piece that was like what you should worry about with regards to surveillance in the Trump administration. So I thought that was like helpful. Like going forward, FISA is up for a vote by the end of this year, and the executive office has tremendous powers to spy on U.S. people within the country, FISA is foreign. And then there's the encryption battle that's coming back again, too. So I thought that was like a really nice bullet pointy, here's what you should care about if you care about this.
For years, I subscribed to a magazine to do the same, called The Week, that really was the idea was we're going to collate all of the weekly news magazines into a quick read.
The main reporter that they have, like the headline name, if you care about politics, is this guy, Mike Allen.
Oh, Mike Allen. Okay.
Who is like connected to everyone in Washington and gives you kind of like they're the one that people in the administration and in Congress are reading to get their gossip.
And he writes the Axios AM newsletter.
Yeah, the first thing you get.
Yeah.
So when I wake up early with the baby, I'm like, all right. I'll read about politics.
I'll tell you why I'm nervous. I'm reading their tech. It's things like this. I'm reading their technology feed, and most of this is kind of the same kind of news we talk about, except for Meet House Party, the next big Gen Z craze. This is, as far as I'm concerned, an already failed app that was created by the founders of Meerkat. Hmm. They're writing about it yesterday.
That is weird.
I'm a little concerned that this that this might be paid placement. It certainly isn't topical.
Yeah.
And it's not marked as an ad. Maybe it just happened by accident that one of their reporters just you know, read a press release and said, let's cover it. I want to know more about
their... If you care about tech, Dan Primack breaks tons of news.
It's really handy that your screen is big, by the way.
Wonderful. You can read it over my shoulder, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And read it from space.
Yeah,
it's like the house party of TV
it's
screens.
Like house party.
Here hot, from Axios though is a big story. Oracle has decided not to take it lying down. Remember, they lost that long-standing suit between Oracle and Google over Java.
Yeah, this thing.
Ultimately, the decision was a weird decision, saying that it was fair use for. But they didn't. They didn't talk. They stipulated that you could copyright an API, which even in of itself seems like a mistake.
Yeah.
But that even though the APIs could be copyrighted, it was fair use that Google used the API.
So what's new on it?
So already it's a damaging decision. Oracle has filed an appeal. Mm-hmm. So this one, I suspect, is going all the way to the Supreme Court, which will be fascinating to see how the Supreme Court justices understand APIs, Java. At least in the original trial, the judge taught himself Java and wrote some code.
Yeah.
Which is surprising and kind of impressive, but yeah.
And here's another big story, and the picture of the week, ladies and gentlemen, from Business Insider, of the Magic Leap backpack.
Yeah.
Though I think the CEO of Magic Leap tried to play it down.
Yeah. So, okay. So they brought this on themselves by being totally secretive, right? And getting, what is their funding? $20 billion? Some huge amount of money.
It's insane.
It's an insane amount of money.
Billions.
Billions. Billions. Billions of dollars. And only a few, select few have seen the Magic Leap prototype.
And it's like, you know where their headquarters are? They're at Disney World.
In Florida.
In Florida. So you have to fly. Not, I would say yes if they asked me, but you have to fly to Florida to go get their demo in a room.
You have to stay in some Mickey Mouse hotel. But just to give people a reminder of just how crazy prototypes can be, when Google started working on Android Wear, the first thing they created was an Android app for the phone, and they built a strap so that engineers were walking around with the entire phone on their wrist. And if that leaked out and somebody said, look, this is what their watch is going to look like, that would be
absolutely. And the provenance of this picture is unknown. The backpack is funky. The CEO tweeted, no, we were just measuring the room or something. This isn't even a prototype.
Yeah, right. It was like a perception device rather than a production device.
However, there have been some not encouraging points about Magic Leap. The video that they showed people to recruit them was completely fabricated. Using technology from the same folks who brought you The Hobbit, Weta, in New Zealand. You know, the one where you're walking around the office and stuff's happening. None of that was with Magic Leap technology. It was all just CGI.
It was their vision.
It was their vision.
It was not.
But not clearly labeled such.
Productized.
Yeah. So, but anyway, they've raised $1.5 billion. They're valued at $4.5 billion. We will see. This is a board meeting that's coming up soon, I think next week. And one of the reasons this was a story is because people feel that the board will have to see some demo of some kind. And so they feel like this maybe was the leaked out demo, but it wasn't. Anyway, we'll watch with interest. I want it to succeed. Scoble told us last week that that Magic Leap has had to back down a little bit on their claims. They're doing this thing where you have multiple focal points, some sort of ray tracing thing. And there were going to be four, and they couldn't do four, and they've got back down to two. I didn't understand it.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? This is like going way back. I'm going to kind of date myself, but Linus Torvalds, after he created Linux and became this rock star, he worked at a company for 3 years, and they kept saying they're going to have this revolutionary technology. It's going to change computing. It's going to do Transmeta.
Transmeta.
Nobody ever remembers, right? Transmeta.
It was a microprocessor.
Yeah. It's like, we're going to revolutionize. And then he quietly faded. He leaves before the product ever gets released after he's there for 3 years.
Wait, did the product get, did they release
it? They kind of released it and it sort of never really went anywhere. But
it was a low processor x86 processor.
It was
what killed
him? The Wikipedia entry starts with was.
Was.
Well, was an American fab.
This was in 95.
They had a great idea because
the Crusoe, that was it.
Yeah, the Crusoe. There we go. They had a great idea because I think in many ways this was a precursor of what
ARM
essentially succeeded in, right? Mm. And that's kind of how I feel about Magic Leap. I think that they have this hype. They have all this investment. for an idea that's probably ahead of its time.
Right.
And will probably get marketed and monetized and developed by someone else eventually. Right. Could be wrong, but it's really hard to see them finding a path forward.
The one vote of confidence that meant something to me was that Sundar Pichai was the one who led the investment from Google. And like, he seems like a guy who doesn't get too hyped on random trends.
Sure.
Like, he seems a bit more reasonable than your average VC who's like, AR is going to be huge and we're going to be in the middle of this thing, even if it's bizarre, you know?
But Google is also a long thinking, they probably want to lock in that
sort of
relationship.
They got to make
some long bets. Right, and like a cynical view, you could say like that was right after Facebook bought Oculus. Right.
Yeah.
And I think if you're a VC, you know that certain percentage of your money, like 80% of it, is thrown away.
90. It's that 1 out of 10. That's,
right.
Yeah.
And right. So you're willing to make
You're making some long shot bets because, well, if this does hit, this could be the biggest hit of the, you know, like of the century. As long as we're talking about Congress, apparently Yoda is back. I love the name. It's the You Own Your Devices Act. You Own Devices Act. Yoda.
You own.
This goes along with the kind of right to repair stuff, which is going on in about 5 or 6 states. We talked to Kyle Weens yesterday from iFixit about the states. He says the one to write your Congress critter or your member of your state legislature is in Massachusetts. That's the most likely. And he said all we need to do is get the right to repair through in one state. That's because right. Then that will force companies working
it's
in that
like
state.
It's like fuel emission standards.
Yeah, they'll publish. Well, it's better than that because they'll have to publish their information. They'll have to offer it for sale. And you do it in one state. You can't not do it in every other
state.
They
just need one state to publish everything.
Right.
And then that's the whole world gets
So if you're in Massachusetts, write to your, what do they call them in Massachusetts? Some arcane thing like your I can't remember. Your alderman, not your alderman.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're a member of the state legislature and say, please pass the Right to Repair Act. But this Yoda Act is actually a national bill, first introduced in 2014. This is an EFF article. They're all excited about it, but I have to say I agree that probably shouldn't have high hopes.
The public doesn't care. That's the problem.
This overwrites.
They do release really amusing press releases. They do it all in Yoda voice, or at least at the start.
Get people to take them seriously.
Totally.
Rhoda, we first wrote about when it was introduced in 2014.
It would override EULAs that limit, you know, right now when you buy something, in many cases, you're not buying it. You're buying the right to use it until such time as the company wants it back, which means you can't transfer ownership of the device and, most importantly, the software. This would override those EULAs so that everyone who buys a secondhand device has the same access to security and bug fixes the original owner had. You'd think that would be obvious.
Mm.
But we're in a weird stage where software isn't a tangible good and the law doesn't really completely make sense. So support that. Write to your Congress critter. I feel like they're busy with other things right now. So, like recess. I want a job where I get recess. Wouldn't that be fun?
I mean, in fairness, they have to go back and talk to their constituents.
Oh, that's what they're doing. They're getting yelled at by their constituents.
Yeah. I mean, in where I live in Louisville, Kentucky, Mitch McConnell came back to huge protest of people in his in front of his house reading.
They followed him from the event to his home.
Okay, so this is a new trend in politics that is very, very bad. Because what's happening is that politicians are increasingly unable to hold public events.
Right.
Because
protesters
they get mobs.
Are shutting them down.
Yeah, and it's like it's the Tea Party started it.
Yeah, I was going to say this is not a new phenomenon. And the Tea Party did the same thing.
But I think the biggest thing is that it's come from social media.
Right.
So this whole idea of scrambling the conversation so that nobody can have a clear
stop doing that.
And so I think
far better to go sit there, be orderly, and then stand up and say, "Mr. McConnell, I am under the Affordable Care Act. I get my insurance. What are you going to do to replace it?" Would be much more effective.
I think you could make a lot of money right now just selling like shame bells.
Shame.
Yeah.
Shame.
My gosh.
I don't want to see Mitch McConnell walking naked down Market Street. Nope.
Yeah. That would be a shame.
For many years, I've been receiving calls on the radio show about people saying, you know, there's this great box you can buy. It's a Kodi box. It streams all the TV shows. I get all the movies. Costs nothing just to buy the hardware. And I've always said, you know what? If you're not paying for HBO, if you're not paying for shame on you, shame, then you're probably pirating it. Well, there have been 5 arrests now. This is the first arrest that I know of for people selling fully loaded...
All in the UK.
Kodi boxes. Unfortunately, it's in the UK. Yeah, yeah, they're protecting it. Yep.
The thing is, in the UK, you are actually paying because...
You pay the license fees.
Pay for... Yeah. Your taxes pay BBC and... Yeah.
So just for
this is not a knock on Kodi, which is legal and good.
Exactly. There's no compromised content on the device when you get it. They can be modified or have add-ons that give you this capability.
Unfortunately, the arrests were in Bolton, Bootle, Cheadle, Manchester, and Reel. So
yeah, I never even heard of
that. Those are great city names. Those are really great city names.
I thought Bolton, Bootle, and Cheadle were your attorneys. I don't.
I like a good British town that has the word upon.
I would hire Bolton, Bootle, and Cheadle.
Just to be clear also that this isn't for downloads. This is for streaming. This is for live TV.
This is the companies that took Kodi, put it on a device, and then enhanced it to steal.
Yep.
So, but these have been available in the United States as well. I don't know if this will put a chilling effect on the companies doing this in the U.S. I hope it does because Kodi's great.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that people see Kodi and they go, oh, that's got to be legal.
Can we talk about gigabit fiber?
All right, let's take a break. You added that. You're interested in this. And you're it's actually a story you guys broke about Google.
Yes.
And their fiber initiative. We'll talk about that in just a second.
Cool.
Jason Heiner from Tech Republic at CBS Interactive.
Tease.
You know, somebody told me you should never tease in a podcast. It just fast forward. Casper, I love my Casper mattress. You will too. It's an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price because you're buying not from a showroom that marks it up 50, 100%. You're buying it direct from the factory. It's made in the U.S. And these are great mattresses. They have done the research. If you go read up on the mattress and all the things they did to create a great mattress, all the prototypes they made, it's made of supportive memory foams for a sleep surface with just the right sink, just the right bounce. It's breathable, so you're cool. You never get hot. It's not like a blanket underneath you. It breathes, and it provides very long-lasting comfort and support. It both gives and supports. It's hard for me to describe. You got to try it. And the good news is you can, not in some showroom with a sales clerk staring at you, giving you the evil eye in the broad daylight. No, in your home, sleep on it for 100 nights. If for any reason you don't love it, Casper will come, they'll pick it up, and they'll refund every penny you paid. So there's no risk for you. You get a 100-night trial. I see this now more and more with these online companies. They realize without a showroom, people are reluctant. But this is such a great idea. You can try it. You don't need a showroom. And what are you going to get? A great mattress. Free shipping and free returns in the U.S. and Canada. The mattress comes in a surprisingly compact box. We got a queen size. For my son, I got a twin for college. This was a couple of years ago. Because the box was small. And if he could, he's on the third floor, no elevator. He and it, you bring it upstairs, open it up. Whoosh, there's the mattress. And it kind of inflates after you open it. Smells great right out of the box. You can sleep on it immediately, and you're going to love your Casper mattress. A great night's sleep just around the corner. And all you have to do is visit casper.com/twit, CASPER.com/twit, and use the promo code TWIT. Some terms and conditions apply because we're going to give you $50 off your mattress purchase when you use the promo code TWIT. Casper.com/twit. I can't say the name of the mattress, but it's a mattress I've spent thousands of dollars on.
Is this the mattress that comes like in a little box?
Yeah, Casper does. Okay, yeah. But the other one, what does not? There's some guy comes in a truck and delivers it. And they take. And all this time, I feel bad now. Mm-hmm. Thousands of dollars down the tube.
You could have got 4 Casper.
I could have got Caspers for the gang. You guys could have your own Caspers. So the FBI. I don't know what the source of this story is, but, FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, you can request. And I think the FOIA thing is about the best thing ever to happen to journalists, right?
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
Best thing that's ever happened to journalists. But now the FBI says you can't request them by email anymore. You got to fax it in or snail mail it in.
After you get like 1 email per day, I think.
Oh, you do?
Yes. Cause,
oh, it's not that bad. Okay. 1 a day is plenty. Although a lot of times FOIAs you send in 20, right? You'll cover the waterfront.
I mean, and this is just the ones that go to the FBI, right? This
right.
is not.
Okay.
Because there's all kinds of
information. Every agency has to offer information.
Yeah. And it sounds like they might, I think like some folks in the Senate are looking into this.
Good.
That
so this is a really
is not the way of the
ignorant
future.
Question, and I'm sorry for that. But can you even buy a fax machine now? Is it like a Where do you get a fax machine? You can get a fax to your phone,
yeah. And then you take a picture of it, and then you like try not to get too much shadow.
There is apparently a FOIA portal, the eFOIPA portal, which is only open from 4 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Friday. I don't know what's going on. It's very strange. All right, I just wanted to bring that up before we talk about gigabit. Now, tell me about this story that you did.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, so I wrote this article for ZDNet, column for ZDNet last week to start the week, which is about fiber broadband. You know, is it a waste with 5G and Elon Musk's, you know, satellites?
Yeah, are we going to get wireless? So, yeah. Well, this kind of happened in the home, right? Everybody was putting in Cat 5 and...
Right.
Then all of a sudden, Wi-Fi became... why did I put the wire in?
The wired is always better, right? I mean, we've got some techies here, so I know they'll speak up and say this too, right? If you can have wired, it's always better. It's more reliable, yada, yada. That said, it is so expensive to lay fiber. And you know, what Verizon came up against with Fios, what Google eventually came up with and why it stumbled was it's just so slow. It's so difficult to lay fiber.
To dig up concrete.
To dig it.
Well,
and
it costs something like $5,000 per sub. And you just, is there justification?
Yeah. I mean, they've got it down. In some cases, it's $1,000. There's a vendor now that says they can do it for $500 to $800.
And our provider, we have 10 gigabit fiber in here.
Yeah.
And that's from SonicNet, as everybody knows. And I've talked to Dane Jasper, who's the founder and CEO, and he's been on the show. And he says they're still laying fiber. He says we can make it economical. He said what we need is 1 in 5 in a neighborhood to sign up. If we get 20% of a neighborhood, that makes it economical. But apparently Verizon, which stopped its Fios effort a couple of years ago, and now Google, which is really slowing down on Google Fiber, I think at the behest of Ruth Porat, the new CFO of Google, or at Alphabet. Both seem to say we can't make money at that. So what's the story?
So obviously they bought Webpass and they went into
The apartment building one, right?
Yes.
That's the one Ohm loves, his Webpass. Yeah. That's what Ohm has.
A bunch of people in San Francisco I know have it. Love it. They say it's amazing.
Well, but you have to live in a apartment building built since 2 years ago. And,
yeah.
You
know, yeah.
It's not easy to get.
It's pretty limited. So, but Google believes they can take this technology because it uses this point-to-point wireless, fixed wireless.
Yeah.
It believes it can take this technology and apply it to fiber deployments for the last mile, right? So instead of putting that one fiber hut, as Google calls it, where that connects to 12,000 homes, they can put, you know, some kind of wireless sensor there and they can beam it. And so they feel like they can go faster. So that was an opinion piece. But in the process of doing this, one thing that we discovered was Louisville is one of the cities where fiber has been coming, where I live.
But it's coming from AT&T.
There's two. So AT&T and Google Fiber have been in an epic battle in Louisville.
Starting in Austin and then...
Yeah, their battle started in Austin and in Louisville. Now they are... that's where they're really
you're
at
gonna
each
get
other's throats.
Double fiber.
Wow. So, you're going to have $5 internet.
So what happened, though, was Louisville was one of the cities they paused. So Louisville passed legislation, One Touch Make Ready, which let Google and any other fiber provider use AT&T's lines. So AT&T did a big lawsuit against them over this. So that's why Louisville became ground zero in the courtroom. But it's also, so last week or at the beginning of February, Google quietly moved Louisville from the potential cities, which have all been paused, to upcoming. And it's the first one since they paused.
And guess whose eyes noticed that?
Exactly.
Somebody's excited.
And so we started asking around about it and found that Google, you know, a lot of signs from a lot of different sources that Google had been preparing to launch in Louisville. And what we found out at the same time was AT&T, at the same time we got wind of this, AT&T also got wind of this, and they had slowed down their fiber deployment. Once Google wasn't coming in anymore, you know, they had kind of quit. And we had searched for months to try to find one customer who AT&T had said they had 10,000 people who were and available to get it. We could not find one customer in Louisville who had it. And this had happened in other cities too, Austin and a few others, to the point that some had written that AT&T makes these big announcements, but like try to find a customer, it's really hard. And so like Tech Dirt wrote that...
Is it really disinformation to scare Google away?
Exactly. And so Tech Dirt wrote that it's less fiber to the premises than fiber to the press release.
Yeah, you know?
And so we found three customers, but we also found a bunch of contractors, and they said now all of a sudden, because what we had noticed was they had stopped building out fiber once in Louisville. And so we... but AT&T apparently got wind of this, that Google is now coming to Louisville. And last week they started hiring tons of contractors and telling them, if you can't move fast enough, we'll find somebody else, that we're putting fiber into essentially every place. Because what Google is about to roll out in Louisville, according to these reports, is it's mixed gigabit and wireless. It's next generation infrastructure where it's trying to combine the two of them. Which is quite a, you know, it's a new infrastructure. Obviously, it's a lot different than what they've WebPass has done in San Francisco and Boston and other cities. But it will be interesting to see. And then at the same time, you have 5G, you have satellite, you know, the satellites that Elon Musk and others also are talking about doing. And so, you know, obviously it's needed. And Google being involved has spurred on competition. And so, but it'll be interesting to see. AT&T says they're building. All of a sudden, Verizon says they're, you know, building again. You have ones like Sonic. What's the one that you guys have?
Sonic, yeah.
It is Sonic.
Yeah.
Well, there's another one that I haven't heard anybody talk about that I discovered on my own. My son got an apartment in Roseville, California, which is north of Sacramento.
Yeah.
And one of the options was gigabit Ethernet. And we're like, what? Who's providing that?
Yeah.
It's called Consolidated Communications. They rolled out in Roseville first. They next going to take over Sacramento, and they're going to move into the Bay Area, according to their plans. $75 a month for gigabit Ethernet.
That's great.
That's
and
incredible.
It is blistering, yeah. Blistering
Sonic
fast.
Sonic charges 40.
Wow.
I know. That's incredible that they charge 40. Actually, some people here from Atlanta, Google Fiber's been there and some other – anybody have – any fiber? No.
No. Only two people have it.
But I feel like this is the answer to your question. Like, should we just wait for Elon Musk to do the satellites? No. We should have lots of competition.
Yeah. But that's the key.
Exactly. Without Google Fiber, though, if Google Fiber doesn't press, right. Will the competition be there? And I think the answer is no. We've seen that with AT&T. Mm-hmm. As soon as Google Fiber announced they weren't doing it, like they stopped building, and we couldn't find a single customer. And so I think Google Fiber is still critical.
Is that because it's hard to make money at that business? Is that really the problem or what? What do they not want it? Why do they not want to do it?
It is hard to make money. I mean,
build. There's these little companies like Consolidated and Sonic that are doing it. I would love to get to the bottom of that.
The economics are hard. There's no doubt that the economics are hard. If you do it in small...
It's hard. You know where it's hard? It's hard where there's competition. If you can't get a big chunk of the market... You
can't dominate it.
You can't dominate it. Yeah. And that's what happened with cable. That's why the FCC gave cable franchises.
Duopolies, yeah.
Yeah, because if you can't... It's so the infrastructure is so expensive, you've got to dominate. Yeah. You've got to own the market.
Speaking of satellite-based wireless, it's kind of a funny story that... That I noticed. My brother-in-law is a developer in Santa Barbara, California. And he's got a friend who lives in the foothills, way beyond any sort of internet connectivity he can get. So he aimed a satellite dish to share his home Wi-Fi with this person who's like 3 miles away.
That's generous.
And they matched up these satellite dishes, and the person has had sharing his Wi-Fi for a long time. Huh. And it's like, it works great. I'm like, wow, that is weird.
More people should do that.
Yeah.
Plus, you get fried chicken every time a bird flies through it. You get dinner.
It's free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sure it's microwave, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, I don't want a lot of microwave beams flying around.
But I guess the other question is, because the fiber really only works in metro areas, right?
And so you have to have population density.
That's where 5G and satellite are going to play a really
ironically
important role.
And sadly, but this has always been the case, where you really could use it, especially wireless technologies, is in rural areas where they don't have the population density. But inevitably, it happened with WiMAX too. It rolls out in the cities because everybody wants to make the most amount of money.
Yeah.
What is the state of 5G? Is that just completely marketing?
No.
Or is it actually coming along?
It's actually a lot more. I saw some demos at CES this year that were legitimate, and they were wireless 5G signals.
What is the technology for 5G? Is it it sounds like it's a basket, like a market basket of different things.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's no one thing.
They're still throwing everything LTE and 4G were still on, 5G is a marketing term, certainly.
Just for like LTE, long-term evolution. That doesn't mean anything. Yeah. And for a long time, 4G was, 3G, but plus.
3.5G and all of that.
Yeah.
I mean,
is there a definition of 5G that is like
a standard? No, there's not a rock solid standard yet. They're still throwing a lot.
Here's what the Next Generation Mobile Networks Alliance says. Data rates of 10 megabits per second for tens of thousands of users, data rates of 100 megabits per second for metro areas, a gigabit per second on the same office floor. In other words, obviously it's very distant dependent, right?
Yes.
Several hundred thousand simultaneous connections for massive wireless sensor networks. That's one of the purposes of 5G is Internet of Things, small devices, sensors. Spectral efficiency significantly enhanced compared to 4G. That's good news because, spectrum is limited.
Yeah.
Coverage improved, signaling efficiency enhanced, and 1 to 10 millisecond latency. Wow.
Yeah.
Which is a lot less than a LTE. So this is what the
fiber is typically 2 to 3 second latency, right? So it's down in the same ballpark. And even the satellites that, SpaceX is talking about putting it up, they're at like basically 30 millisecond.
Yeah.
30 seconds.
You can't do it to a satellite. Latency. Well, so that's good for a satellite.
That's really good. And that's what most of our... good
that's
connections are now, today.
Yeah. Right, and 20 to 30,
Where satellites today is more like 600 to 800 milliseconds. Right. It's
why do the satellite projects always seem to fail, though? Remember Teledesic?
Yeah.
Bill Gates was going to have the entire planet wired by 1999.
Yeah. See, that's what Elon Musk says now, right? He's like, we're just going to do the whole planet. Although he's worried that the Chinese are going to shoot down his satellites. He's like, because they have actually blown up some satellites,
Are they geostationary?
Yeah.
So they're not.
They're just putting 4,000 of them. So they're going to be,
You know where satellite communications has zoomed forward in recent years is backcountry access to satellite for GPS. Like I do trips where you're in the middle of nowhere and can't get a signal. And that's not really reasonable anymore because it's so easy to bring a device. Like there's this company, Delorme. I want to say Delorme because it has an E on the end, but I think you're actually supposed to say Delorme.
Delorme is a longtime GPS manufacturer.
And they are just a map maker. If you go hiking in the backcountry now, everyone has one on them. And they're
interesting.
They're at home.
But you don't
their
get
families
maps.
Are watching their little dots go.
Oh, you do?
You can set it up to update as often as you want. So hourly is pretty frequent. And then you see the person walking, where they are. There is no
this is a safety technology.
They're going up Mount Tamalpais.
It's a safety technology. And up till a year or two ago, the main device was a Spot, which is just a 911 device.
Yeah.
And this is now basically a satellite texter and GPS thing. And I don't know. I feel like as long as I'm on this earth now, I will be in range.
Well, every couple of years, I think I get inspired. I'm like, I'm going to get a satellite phone or some way to get satellite data. I'm sure the prices have come down.
Yeah,
I check the prices.
And these are, you can just activate them for the month you're on, and it's $15 or something. It's
crazy.
But
it's just text messaging, essentially, right? You can't actually get
you're not surfing the web. Loading web pages in my tent, no.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Why are you in the tent?
I want to be watching my four.
There's no Netflix on this.
Look out the view.
They're not inexpensive. This is a Delorme InReach for $250.
That's right.
Base model, and if you want nav, it's $300.
It's about the same size as this watch.
Do you pay a monthly? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you activate it, and there's a couple of different levels, but basically to get unlimited, it's $15 a month.
So you're like a out country backpacker, that kind of thing for this.
Yes,
right?
I like technology and not technology.
And getting far, far away.
It's good stuff.
Nowadays, I would think people would be scared to do this.
You
mean I'll be out of touch? You mean I have no way? So this is why this exists.
Sissies, these millennials. Sissies. I remember a time, by God, when we didn't have
it. At least I could text Google and ask them where to go.
We used to use the Thomas Guide to drive around.
Yeah. Love those books. This is interesting. I wasn't familiar with Spot, but that was help me. I'm,
Yeah, that was like SOS, send emergency.
Which you can do within reach.
I think I suddenly need this, actually.
Oh, yeah?
We're going to be living in Morocco this year in Fez.
So what does it use? Iridium. The failed Motorola geostationary satellite that was for sat phones.
Does it really?
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of like a Garmin type thing where like someone else is going to make these too, but this is like the company that's been doing it forever and they're good at it.
Now we know what happened to the Iridium satellites.
But like try texting on the version I was using this summer. And
was it real slow?
It's like... You know, well, move up and down the keyboard with a little...
the middle of nowhere. What do you want? You're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. It's like changed that little version of reality. A couple of summers ago, I went to Glacier Bay and, you know, didn't see a person for 4 days.
Well, and this is genuine. We, of course, and people who are Tech TV fans from days gone by know very well about one of our colleagues, James Kim, who followed a GPS... This was, I guess, early days of GPS. This was about 10 years ago.
For some reason, that story just, like, triggered something in my head recently, and I went and reread all the stuff about it, and so it's tragic. So crazy to think about. I think it was in 2006 that it happened.
It wouldn't happen today.
It's just different.
The GPS mapping system said, oh, this is a perfectly good road. This is fine. It's a road.
Yeah.
So they followed it, got stuck. He had his two children with him.
And his wife.
They had some food, some snacks, but they weren't. There was no cell signal. They had to. You know, they didn't know what to do. They were literally burning their tires for warmth. And finally, James sadly said, "Well, I'm going to go get help." And there you go. And he passed away in the snow trying to get help for his family.
Yeah, he died.
One of my coworkers had seen it. Yeah.
So, boy, you're right. That's something that probably, I hope, will never happen again.
Yeah, I mean, but we're just in a time when that's changing, right? Like, you also have, like, the Malaysian Airlines flight going away, and, like, next year, they'll never found a satellite picture taken of every place on the globe every day or every hour. And, you know, we're living in, like, an increasingly documented, privacy-free world, but there are some benefits to that.
Let's take a break on that note. You know what technology is good for, though? Actually, really good for is buying tickets online. If you want to see somebody.
Previously.
Don't play that. I'm talking here. I'm working here. We don't do. Actually, you know, let's do that first. That's a good idea. I forgot all about that. Well, you know, we have a staff. They're very sweet. They work very hard on making these little movies about what happened during the week. And I always forget to play them. So let's do it. Let's see what happened this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
Okay, Google, play medieval music.
Here's a
Google
Play music station called Folk Metal.
Folk Metal? Okay, Jarvis, stop.
iOS today.
National nightmare is over, ladies and gentlemen. Finally, Jason will get his Pixel back and you'll get your iPhone back.
What I realized at the end of the month is, I mean, it's just another OS that does the same darn thing.
They get amazing battery life out of this.
I, out of sheer laziness, have gotten into the habit of not plugging it in at night because I knew it would make it to the next day.
All about Android.
Is there anything that just like did not work on Android that really frustrated you that you just really missed from iOS?
Well, I missed iMessage, really, but there's nothing else that everybody uses.
Tech news today.
The Wall Street Journal reports on a new handheld device that will tell you if you smell bad. A gadget called Kun Kun. It connects with a smartphone app, which will tell you whether or not you stink.
If you think that you need a dedicated device to tell you whether you smell... You smell.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
Right.
Twit, making the world safe for technology.
But not
Megan, have you ever had an Android phone?
But I've always been a Mac user. I was just forced into using Android. And I don't hate it.
That's the praise we're looking for.
I don't hate it. I do hate this watch, however. I'll tell you that right now. She hated the Android Wear watch. She said, do you have anything less crappy? I said... No. Here's Megan with a look at the week ahead.
Here's a look at just a few of the stories we'll be watching in the week ahead. Recode holds a big conference out here in California featuring speakers like Apple's dancing executive, Eddie Q, and friend of the network, Ben Thompson from Stratechery.
Oh.
And this isn't just any conference. It's one of the fancy ones.
Did you know
with
Ben would be out here?
Chef. T-Mobile will release earnings on Valentine's Day of this week. In case the announcement is bad, they will also aim to distract customers by bringing back their free pizza deal for subscribers. Starting this week, customers can claim one free large or pan single-topping pizza every month by logging into the T-Mobile app every week. 500 Startups Demo Day is also this week. The accelerator for new companies will show off their latest crop to investors. And finally, O'Malik is bringing together some of the greatest minds in AI for a conference in San Francisco that aims to address the challenges of a future where artificial intelligence is the new black. Jason Howell and I will cover all of this and a whole lot more all week on Tech News Today, each and every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific. And that is a look at the week ahead.
Thank you, Megan Maroney from Tech News Today. I love the hashtag for the Giga Ohm AI event.
It's what was it?
Giga Oh My. Maybe that's just if you read it differently. Our show today brought to you by SeatGeek, the best deal on sports, concert, and theater tickets with SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts, you know, it's always challenging. You can get them from a lot of different venues. It's always been hard to find the best deal for the show or the game you want to go to. And none of the older ticket sites have any incentive to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app. I use it now all the time. I like to make it easier than ever for you to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek. You'll love this. Everything is designed about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for fans. They do the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites, so you're going to get the best deal available. And SeatGeek wants to get you the most bang for your buck, so every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. So you know if you're overpaying for a bad seat, or more importantly, you'll see underpriced seats to be able to find deals that fit your budget. And I've got a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. So what you need is the SeatGeek app on iOS or Android. Go to the settings tab and add the promo code TWIT, and you will get $20 after you make your first ticket purchase. So this one's on me. How about that? SeatGeek. Go to the iOS store, the Android Play store, get the SeatGeek app, and in the settings, add the promo code TWIT for $20 off. You'll like it, too. It's what we decided, Lisa and I decided, we want to see more live music, you know?
That's great.
I love live music. And when you see it, you go, why don't I hear more live music? We had live music in studio a couple of weeks ago, and it's like, we want to see more live music. So we just go to SeatGeek every Wednesday to say, what can we go see? Sometimes we'll go out of town. Like, maybe there'll be a great concert in Louisville soon.
Absolutely.
And I'll just come visit you.
A good Philharmonic.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Folk metal.
Love it. Apple iCloud. I don't like this story. I hope this is fake news. Is it fake news? Apple iCloud keeps any browser history delete going back more than a year. There have been a lot. This comes from Elcomsoft, which is a Russian hacking tool creator. but I think this is related to the story about Apple keeping your contacts in the cloud and your history of your messages and so forth. This is probably a setting.
Yeah, by default, you know, the browser, if I remember right, somebody can confirm this, but their browser keeps your browsing history forever.
It wants to sync it so you can sync it. So you get a new device and your browsing history's in there.
So first thing, if I have a new Mac, is I go in and I turn that off.
Yeah, whenever ever I see an alert saying, do you want to do something with iCloud?
I say no.
Vladimir
Kotelov, who's the CEO at Elcomsoft, said that iPhone keeps a separate iCloud record called Tombstone. Okay, that's suspicious right there. In which it knows their deleted web services or visits were stored. He said he came across the issue by accident when he was looking through Safari history on his own iPhone. And he used their phone breaker software to extract data from the linked iCloud account and found it deleted records going back a year. Now, in Apple's favor, they call them cleared, not deleted. Does that help? No. Kotelov said a year, it may be forever.
Yeah. I bet it's just forever.
What's that?
Safari browser by default.
What's that?
Always has...
It's Russians saying stop talking.
Yeah, just by loading this article.
Yeah, I apparently have triggered something bad.
I think all the Safari versions keep your history forever by default, and you have to turn that off.
So definitely turn off the iCloud. Because, and by the way, we should point out, and I point this out every time, but I think Apple really doesn't want people to remember or realize this, that Apple has the key to your iCloud stuff. Your stuff may be encrypted, and it's encrypted by a key, but Apple has the key. Otherwise, it wouldn't be able to do all this selective syncing stuff.
That's true.
And that means if they receive...
Not for iMessage, though, right?
Yeah.
As well?
Bad news. And if they got a subpoena or a warrant, or maybe they just felt like it, they could give that information to law enforcement. And a malicious... I don't think Apple would just spy on you for fun, but a malicious employee, a rogue employee could. So this is no different than a lot of cloud services, Dropbox.
Right. Also, what if somebody hacks Apple, right? And then they can have Apple to get
Well, we've seen that before, remember? Stuff. Remember those pictures from famous movie stars? Do you trust Google? Maybe you shouldn't. Google has added a, this is from the Register, the privacy, what would they call them, wonks at the Register. Chrome 56, the latest version of Chrome, which came out at the end of the month, it added something that they're calling a Bluetooth snitch API. With Chrome 56, according to Google, your web app can communicate with nearby Bluetooth devices in a private and secure manner using the web Bluetooth API. In other words, you don't have to pair with light bulbs, toys, heart rate monitors, LED displays, just a few lines of JavaScript, and you can query all of these devices. Google says... it's TLS, and users have to allow the connection with a touch or a mouse click. So that's good news, but it is kind of built in. And how long before somebody figures out a way to get around the click?
Just leave the front door open. It's fine.
Yeah. And can you turn it off? Safe. Probably not. Unlike your iCloud stuff. All right, this is all depressing. and I'm afraid I don't. Do you have anything that I've missed that's really good news? The Beats X headphones will be here.
How about? Go ahead. Yeah, Beats X. That's kind of interesting. What about the Amazon Go, the cashier-free, you know, Go stores that may only need 6 human employees?
Yeah, I saw that too. That's not the happy story. Amazon. now, Amazon says we're not in the business to put people out of work, and we aren't going to probably put these stores everywhere, but these are the stores that they were prototyping in Seattle.
Right.
I think there's only one where you walk in, you use a barcode on your phone to say, it's me, and then the cameras and sensors in the store will follow you around, and you want anything, you just take it off the... It's kind of like going to Vegas and buying, you know, using the mini bar. It goes, oh, you took a sandwich. And then you walk out the door, but you're automatically charged.
Amazon's worked really hard on this to say, look, we're not trying to minimize the number of employees. We're trying to provide better service.
I think as a user, I would like it, right?
I think who wouldn't like that? That's, you know, the lines at the grocery store is kind of the worst part about going.
Right.
They've said that the jobs are going to be in, like, food prep, you know, that now they're going to have all these, like, pre-prepped meals. What's the...
The tech industry has to, at some point, kind of just own up to it. It's not really its fault, but all of the things the tech industry is doing about automation, machine learning, and all of this are ultimately going to cost jobs. They are. That's what
the John Deere of the 21st century, right?
Right.
At the turn of the century, 1900, 40% of Americans worked in farming.
They were wielding
scythes. So I did a story on this recently. I tried to find the good news on the automation killing job story. And I talked to a professor at NYU named Arun Sundararajan, and he had some ideas that were relevant. He used the farmer example too, but he said also, like, we didn't have tourism 100 years ago. And now that's a huge industry that employs millions of people and supports many world economies. Another one he suggested where automation could create jobs or AI could create jobs was healthcare. So, like, right now, doctors do how many years of preparation before they can get their job? And then we pay them lots of money to do their very specialized thing. But, like, if we had a world where AI could enable always on healthcare, then we would need healthcare technicians to just go, like, oh, your chart looks weird today. Let's, like, work on how to diagnose that and, like, keep you all healthier. And that actually would be, like, a version of the world where more people work in that industry than the many, many
people.
Does
he think it's going to be a net zero?
No, I don't think you can, like, go that far. But it was a nice distraction from the, like, bad news.
I mean,
About five weeks, approximately 11 months ago, I was in Cuba. And that's an extreme example of a country that has maintained full employment by not automating anything. Yeah. I mean, you see people sweeping the streets with with palm fronds, and you the farmers are using ox-driven things, and they have full employment, and living in Cuba sucks. It sucks.
You're saying being employed is not the ticket to happiness
in
life?
I'm saying that if you resist automation in order to employ people, there's a spectrum, obviously, but it will never work.
But that's a communist country. They don't pay rent. Yeah. It's a very different situation.
Yeah,
there may be other reasons it sucks.
But my point is all these other things that employ people in our world
I prefer the life we have.
Yeah.
But I feel very bad. There's a lot of people. Industrial jobs are not coming back.
Drivers are going to lose jobs.
Cashiers. My first job out of high school, a cashier at McDonald's, I don't know if that job will exist in 10 years.
Well, robots should be making those burgers because it's robotic work.
It's better work. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the other point that he had, which is like, we've been worried about this forever, but the fact that technology improves on the jobs that we have today doesn't mean tomorrow's jobs are less interesting. And like he said, actually, I think under the Johnson administration, there was a committee to figure out basic income. So, like, this is not a new conversation.
I don't think is he advocating basic income?
No,
I don't think that's a good solution. But I do think that preparing for this, training for what jobs will exist in 10 years, is a much better plan than trying to bring back industrial era jobs, which are never going to come back.
This funny thing has happened. If you go back and look at public dialogue in the Industrial Revolution.
Exactly.
Farming.
So like,
they were freaked out in the same exact way. They're going to, what's going to happen? There's going to be no jobs left.
So maybe take some solace in looking at history and learning that that wasn't the case then.
Do you have any idea how many blacksmiths are going to be out of work now? Like, what are we going to do?
They're going to become coders. In fact, this article in Wired Magazine, this is, I'm sorry, guys, from Clive Thompson, the next big blue collar job, coding.
So, but I guess he's a data miner if you look at this.
Yeah, well, no, I interviewed Clive about this story. It's running tomorrow morning on 60
TV. Tell us about it.
Well, for an example, mentioned in that story, there is a guy whose name is Rusty Justice who employs former coal miners in Kentucky. I'm not sure how far from you. I forget my Kentucky geography.
Eastern, so it's a couple hours.
Yeah, they've retrained themselves as like a coding squad. And they like brought them all in, and similar to like one of those things where you'd pay to go for 8 weeks and get some kind of a vocational credit that you can go employ yourself. Except they actually hired the people, brought them in, trained them, and now they're working as a team taking gigs.
This company's called BitSource.
Yeah,
it's cool. And so Clive's point is like we make a lot of hype about like the coding genius staying up 72 hours to make the perfect invention that we've never heard of, but the reality is that a lot of coding is like putting together pieces, like
you're a code
which
monkey.
Is not that different from a job in like construction or
but
plumbing.
But someday that login code's going to write itself.
And if we think about it that way, then maybe
I asked him that question.
Yeah. And he said, what I'm talking about is the next 15 to 20 years. After that, it's up to you.
Yeah. Yeah. The AI code will write
I'll give you another one too, because one of the dirty little secrets about big data is that the algorithms really aren't smart enough to sort out all the stuff we need for big data.
Humans have to.
Humans have to. There are armies of people doing data sorting, data cleaning, and all kinds of things behind the, you know, IBM, Microsoft, Amazon. They hire armies and armies of people doing, you know, click work. We did a big investigative story on this because there's some problems with it too, because they're all independent contractors and it's got its issues. And so we wrote about that, especially Amazon Mechanical Turk. But this is creating a whole new scale of jobs. You know, some people are arguing that these are some of the blue collar jobs of the digital age, right?
You know, it reminds me of the music industry where you had these superstars, these multi-platinum artists, but there was plenty of kind of lower level work for just a journeyman musician.
Playing at a bar.
Playing at a bar or whatever. And those weren't bad jobs. But if you looked at, you know, Metallica, they weren't Metallica level jobs, but I think there are a lot of people very
happy. And I think his story is like kind of a rebranding of this idea that we need more coding education because that's where the jobs are. But to say it in like this notion of calling it a blue collar job kind of shifts your metaphor.
Yeah. It's sure. not a blue collar job. You're working in an office.
Well, right. but blue collar labor doesn't have to be physical. It's physical just like labor. It doesn't have to. It just kind of means like a good middle class income.
Yeah. There was an article recently saying that the solution to journalism's problems is that journalists need to re-embrace their blue-collar roots, which is an interesting idea. And I agree.
I think that was about
thing.
Elitism.
But we are also taught a lot that success means you're going to be a millionaire. You're going to have these, and you know what? Podcasters is the next blue-collar job. Frankly, I mean, most people.
Well, see, I think
there's plenty of good middle-class income. That's not so bad these days,
right? But I think it's also so much, especially in tech journalism, which I'm a huge critic of tech journalism as it is nowadays. But everybody wants
to be
an access journalist.
By tech journalists.
Everybody wants to be a star. They're like, look at me, I'm at the Apple event.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? Why don't you do your job? Why don't you go find something that is not following the herd around and broadcasting the echo chamber. Think for yourself and do your own legwork. That's what we need in journalism.
Zig when everybody else is zagging. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's my motto. Do you talk about this in Code Blocks? Like, you know, making a living? No.
A little?
All right.
I'm going to fix your shout out because I can see his shirt. It's Coding Blocks.
Coding Blocks. I'm trying to give him a plug and I did it wrong.
Coding Blocks? Is that what you said?
Coding Blocks, the Coding Blocks podcast. Listen every week, right? am I close? Anyway, hey, it's been great having Liz Gaines here. She is at six. There it is, codingblocks.net. And I asked you, is it curly braces blocks? And you said it was. It is. I see them.
Nice.
Clean code, how to write classes the right way. Oh, this is like the real deal. This is like actual coding. Fun. I always wondered if you could do a coding podcast. Apparently you can. Liz Gaines is at 60db.co. Everybody should subscribe, should get the app. And if you're lucky enough to have an Amazon Echo device, turn on that task. It's a great task.
Can you listen to one on your phone and then finish it on Echo?
Yeah, absolutely. Nice. It's the stream's about you, not like every single person in the world listening to the radio at the same
time.
That's
a good slogan. The stream's about you.
Oh, yeah.
I like it. Thank you, Liz. It's great to see you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Congratulations on your success.
I don't know. The stream about you sounds like a Trump Russian.
The stream is for you? It's your stream.
The stream is for you. Stand right there.
Oh, I see where you're going with that.
That's Mike Elgin. Mike Elgin, he is at, Mike Elgin, or Elgin.com.
Elgin.com.
Mike Elgin on the Twitter, plus Mike Elgin on the Google Plus. And
Fatcast.audio.
Fatcast is his podcast.
Yes.
All about?
It's a food and technology, and sometimes food or technology.
And someday you're going to tell us what your wife is up to.
She is hatching a scheme that is going to be awesome. Someday.
That's all.
I'll tell you in a couple months.
Come back. You'll be in Vienna or Venice or somewhere. With a V. And you will come on the show and you will tell us what it is.
I will.
Exit stealth mode.
Exactly. She's in stealth mode. That's exactly right. Jason Heiner, always a pleasure. He's the guy who got me elected as president of the
It's a long
Internet,
time ago now.
Many years ago, and I'm still serving.
Yeah, it's a lifetime
It's a lifetime
office.
Yeah, job with no power, so it's good. JasonHeiner.com, at Jason Heiner. Of course, you can catch him on ZDNet, the CBS Interactive, and Tech Republic.
Follow the geeks, too.
Buy the book, because it's about me and my friends.
10 digital innovators. Follow the geeks, yeah.
And I know every one of them, and I love every one of them. It's a really good story, except for the young woman. I never heard of her, and that's the ending.
Maya Penn,
yeah. And I love that.
Yeah. She's 14, a 14-year-old entrepreneur who'd been an entrepreneur since she was 8 when we...
Such a great story.
Yeah. She's doing amazing things now, too. She's published her own book now and has been on Oprah and everything. She's gone blown up, as we figured she would.
We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2300 UTC. If you'd like to watch live, you can go to our website, twit.tv/live, or live.twit.tv, or YouTube.com/tweet, because yes, we're on YouTube Live and they haven't kicked us off yet. Celebrating our third week of not being kicked off YouTube Live. That is a big milestone. I think we started YouTube Live right when the president was inaugurated. So it'll be interesting to see who lasts longer. he's probably going to win on that one. We also are available on demand after the fact, audio and video at twit.tv or wherever you get your favorite podcast, or Tune in 60 dB and you'll hear some great short twit bits. I think our long show is too long even for your long
form. No, I think it's on there.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
This was the fastest one that I've ever done.
It feels fast.
This went really quick.
Believe me, this was a long-ass show. Ask the people sitting in the uncomfortable chairs in the front row there. Is this a long-ass show? Yes, it was.
Long-form podcast.
Long-form. Very long-form. We're still doing the survey. Last few days, we're going through the end of the month, so I guess a couple more weeks left if you would like to take a couple minutes out of your day. And I know it's a busy day, and I'm very grateful if you go to twit.tv/survey. It literally is just a couple of minutes. It's a much shorter one than in the past. It helps us sell the show so we understand a little bit better about you, but it's anonymized. We don't want your personal information. We're not telling people about you personally. We're just
if you love it, support it.
Yeah, who listens to Twit? Is it men? Is it women? Is it college graduates? Who is it? That kind of thing.
I listened to Twit in 18 different cities last year. I counted that. I meant to tell you. I've been meaning to tell you that.
How did you count that? Just did?
Just because I was in 18 different cities and I listened I go walk whatever city I'm visiting. I love to walk in whatever cities I'm in.
I love to walk in cities, yeah.
And I always listen to podcasts and nice. Twits. Always listen to Twit, yeah.
Well, I hope you all always listen to Twit. I thank you for doing so. And we will see you next time. But meanwhile, I have to say, another Twit is in the can.
This is amazing.